Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, brown cow, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing,
hey, hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
Everyone, Jim Toronto with you here, filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 4 a.m. Somewhat of an abbreviated show, only an hour less, but as usual, always trying to pack 4 or 5 pounds of radio baloney into a 1 pound bag, and we've certainly got our baloney all set up and ready to be stuffed into that 1 pound bag. So glad that you are here with me as we approach the holidays. Maybe you're already off until the new year, or at least till after Christmas, so there's no need for you to get up early. And there's all the reason for you to stay up late with me until 4 a.m. at least. I'm going to be here till 4. I don't know what you're doing. I'm going to be here till 4. I think you should be with me too. Tom Hush is our producer this morning, and Tom will be popping in and out on different topics and different things. My phone number here is 312-981-7200. Also the name, the number for the text, but I'd love to hear from you. The lively art of conversation always needs two people. And texts are nice, but you know, this is an audio medium. So it's nice to talk to people. 312-981-7200. On the show today, we will talk a little later to Mick Kaler in the Pop Culture Club, talking about some of the cool pop culture issues that are going on right now in the world, including, of course, we will touch upon the big heralded release this week. And now this weekend is officially over. We'll get the official tally on just how did the final saga, the final chapter of the Skywalker saga, The Rise of Skywalker, do at the box office. There's been an interesting reaction. Critics have been tough on the movie. Fans have loved it, although some fans have loved it and some have been mace, you know, men's amends. So we'll talk a little bit about that, as well as the other Star Wars phenomena, which actually happened a couple of weeks ago. And who would have thought that another Star Wars-related topic would even possibly overshadow the release of the final movie? But it pretty much did. We'll talk about that. And also yesterday, did you happen to see, well, now it's, I guess, yesterday, it's Monday now, right? So I'm talking Saturday night. Did you happen to see Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live? Eddie Murphy came back after many, many years to host Saturday Night Live, and I have to say, I thought he did a great job. He basically brought back all of his classic characters, like Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood and Gumby, and what was the? I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the other one. Which and of course in Buckwheat. And so, but you know what? Though he really brought some fresh life to them. I'd like to get your reaction to the fact, especially if you don't remember a lot of those characters. Were they funny to you? I know that I thought he did a great job coming back, and I thought he did great reprising those roles. And so for those of us who remember when he originated those things like Buckwheat and Gumby and Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, it was great to see him not only do those, but do them very well. But I also wondered, did a younger generation even get it? Did they even know those characters? So we'll talk about that. What else is on the list here? Well, we have, there were some interesting statistics. I have talked about this in the past, and I want to talk about it again because of some of the interesting statistics that were released recently about Uber and the safety of an Uber ride. Now, I know most everybody at this point uses Uber, except probably one person, and that one person is me, for two reasons. First of all, if you listen to me with any regularity, you know that I do not have an iPhone. I do not have a smartphone. I have a flip phone, and damn proud of it. It's called a cool pad. Cool pad for a cool guy. And so I can't get Uber even if I wanted it. I don't have any apps on my phone. So I can't even use Uber because I don't have a smartphone. But, whoa, what am I hearing there? But I'm also hearing that, or finding out, that I always thought that Uber was a little less safe than I would think a cab would be. And I always had my own kind of, I don't know, just misgivings about the idea of getting into a stranger's car. And I know that basically you're doing that when you get into a cab, but at least there's some regulations and a vetting of that driver. And I didn't really trust Uber to be the one to vet those people. And sure enough, there were some alarming, at least I think, and many people thought, some alarming statistics that came out about the safety of Uber. So we'll talk about that. And I'd love to get your input on that as well at 312-981-7200, because I want to know, am I completely out of touch, or is my skepticism or my possible fears about what Uber does, the basic model, are they just unfounded? I don't know. Especially if you're an Uber user, I do want to talk to you about that to find out if when you hear about these statistics, will this change or has it changed your behavior anyway? So we'll talk a little about Uber. It's a big travel season right now, obviously, the next couple of weeks. And I have observed a few things at O'Hare that I think need to be pointed out, because for many people who come to Chicago, O'Hare Field is the first touchstone that people experience about Chicago. And we're always happy and proud to say how O'Hare Field is the busiest airport in the world or the busiest airport in the United States. But are we really serving the public as well as we should? It's not good to be busy if you're not doing a good job handling the busyness. And I wonder if we are. And I want to talk about that a little later. And what else is on here? Well, just a whole bunch of other stuff, too, that we may or may not get to. I don't know. As I said, I try to pack as much as I can. And if not, we just do it again, because I will actually be here this time tomorrow from 11 to 4. There's no Bear game tomorrow. So I think I will be on for the full 5-hour shift tomorrow from 11 until 4. So we got lots to talk about the next couple of days. And so I certainly hope that you'll stay with me this morning, as well as tune in tomorrow night at 11. And we'll go straight through till 4 a.m. In the morning leading up to Christmas Eve. Boy, I have this little ornament that is a countdown to Christmas ornament. And you set the time and the date, and then you activate it, and it begins to count down the days, hours, minutes, and seconds until Christmas. And I started it on the earliest possible date that it allows you to start it, on October 1st. And at that point, it was 84 days. So when I looked at this ornament on the kitchen table, and it said 84 days, what did that even mean, 84 days? And I picked it up today, and it said 2 days. Wow. I just remember setting that thing. We say this every year, but this one did seem to go very quickly. Christmas right around the corner. And so I wonder if you're ready to go or not. I'm sure if you haven't sent all the packages that you have to send, I think you've missed the deadline on that. But certainly, I'm sure in the next day or so, people will be scurrying around to get that last-minute Christmas shopping done. Good luck to you. I went out today to the grocery store, and everybody was out buying stuff for the Bear game, I would expect. But lots of lines, a lot of people buying hams. I saw a lot of people with hams in their carts. So people stocking up. It is the Christmas season. So we're going to have a nice, fun, little casual show here today to prime you up for the holiday season. As I said, I hope you'll stick around. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. And tidings of comfort and joy and stories of Chicago's very own, Chicago's merry own, WGN-TV news specials on Christmas Day at 5:30 and 9:30. I'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Also, we have to christen the show in the only way that we can if you're an Elton Jim fan. Ah, yes. The smell and the spritz of Glade Spray's Cashmere Woods. My scent. It's been now my scent for about 5 years. I discovered it at a Menards one day, just grabbing one. They were out of fresh linen. So I grabbed another one and sprayed a little Cashmere Woods and fell in love with it it's been the scent of the Toronto household since then. And a few weeks ago, I was doing some fill-in work here, and I was looking for a new personal scent. Producer Tom Hush, do you wear cologne at all?
Not really, unless it's a special occasion.
Like, what's a special occasion?
Like when we go to Christmas Eve dinner, I'll put on a little something very inoffensive.
Like
very
what?
Simple.
Like what would you consider simple and inoffensive?
Something from like Bath and Body Works, you know, like a $10 bottle-ish.
Yeah,
cologne.
I mean, I've always worn cologne for a while, and my favorite one was this one called Montage that was by a designer, I guess, named Graham Webb. And unfortunately, it went out of business about 4 or 5 years ago. I was hoarding as much of it as I could. I'm pretty much run out of it now. The last bottle that I have, it's very fitting that I'm right down to the end of the of this bottle as the end of the year approaches. Last year, my wife, for a Christmas present, sent away to a company that supposedly matches cologne. You tell them which cologne you like, and they will match it. And so Graham Webb's Montage was a fairly popular brand. In fact, it's still on the internet, on eBay and stuff. It goes for like $150, $190 a bottle. It's that rare because the people that use it, like me, we loved it. And I haven't been able to find something even close to it yet. So I was asking the listeners, and I did get quite a few options and some recommendations. And just so you know, I tried many of those out, and I will mention to you the one that so far is the leader that I found on my own. I took all these recommendations with me, and I went to the only place you can go, basically, is the men's cologne department at Macy's, and I was completely bathed for about 3 days in cologne. You could smell me coming from about 5 miles away. Because I got spritzed by everybody. Every 5 seconds, I got spritzed by somebody. And I spritzed myself. And I was filled with many different manly scents. So I'll let you know which one so far is the leader, which I actually might go out and buy before 2020. So I have my new scent for the new year. But right now, we're going to go to the phones here. Somebody's talking about phones and apps and Ubers. And I'm getting a little feedback. Do you hear that? Yeah. So is Tracy there?
Good morning, Jim.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to hear you.
Very good to hear you. What's going on?
I just want to let you know, I'm the same way that you are. I don't have any apps on my phone. It is a smartphone, but I prefer to just talk to somebody, even over texting. My thumbs don't work that well when I'm typing, and I rather be talking.
Well, this is weird, but we'll do it anyway. So please, I'm in stereo on AM, so just so you know. You know what? I have big thumbs. So it's impossible for me to text with any kind of speed.
Me too.
Yeah.
I can't type on a typewriter or on a keyboard, so how can I do it on a small phone?
Yeah, well, you should see, because I have this flip phone, and so when I text, I have to hit the number and get to the right letter. You remember that whole thing?
Yes.
I still do that.
I love it.
Yeah, so when I text someone, usually my answers are yes, no, and maybe.
Correct.
And maybe I'll put a question mark if I can find that.
You're an efficient texter.
Yeah, well, I'm succinct because I have to be.
Because you have to be.
Well, I'm glad that you are with me, but you used to have, you, at least you have a smartphone, so you are somewhat into the...
It's smart, but I guess I haven't used my phone's brain enough as I should.
Well, I have to tell you, one day the flip phone's going to come back, and people are going to say, wow, I remember when Jim Toronto was using that way back in the... In the 20-teens.
In the 20-teens.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you're on. I love listening to you.
Well, thank you so much, Tracy. And listen tomorrow. I'll be on from 11 to 4 as well.
I'm looking forward to it.
Very good.
Have a great night.
Take care. Have a good holiday. Yeah, hopefully. Can we do something with the phone on that? No? Is Adam around?
Yeah, it's don't worry. It's a thing with landlines.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. Anywho, but still doesn't. Please don't let that keep you from calling 312-981-7200. The way I look at it, if you hear my voice twice, that's that's your advantage. Anyway, so Tom, you were saying that you don't really use cologne, but what you do is go to a lot of movies.
I do,
and we were talking before the show started. We'll talk about this a little later in the show. You have seen The Rise of Skywalker.
I have, yes.
And I won't spill the beans, but all I can say is it sounds as if your reaction is very similar to many people who I know who have seen the film. I wanted to go see it this weekend so we could talk about it with a little knowledge about it. But I'll tell you, I read enough or talked to enough people that I really was getting a sense that I was hearing the same thing from a lot of people. I am going to see it. I wanted to go, but every show was sold out, and I made the mistake about 6 months ago of seeing a movie that I wanted to see really bad and deciding to sit because it was almost sold out. I sat in the front row. Never do that again. It's the worst. It really is off-putting to your sense of balance. You, when you're looking up, I was actually getting, I don't know if I was getting vertigo or what was going on. It was just a very strange experience. I hated watching. I can't even remember the movie. That goes to show you. Oh, no, you know what it was? I went to see Downton Abbey, and my eyes were hurting so much, I just went to sleep. So I have to see that movie again because I didn't even see the movie. It was so off-putting sitting so close. So I would rather see it maybe the next couple of days or maybe even next weekend when the big rushes are gone and I can get a good seat. But we will talk about it because I've read enough about it and Tom has seen it. And I'd love to hear any reactions from any Star Wars fans out there. Because my view is, and I'll just tease this with you, we've got 9 movies now. 9 Star Wars films. And I have to say that, and I've seen them all except now for the last one, but based on the reaction I'm hearing from many people about this latest one, and having seen the other 8, as much as Star Wars is this cultural phenomenon, this generational phenomenon, this pop culture monolith, out of the 9 films, I think you can argue that maybe 3 of them are really good. A third of the 9 are really good movies. And if you want to really be honest, Star Wars fans, 2 of those good 3 were made 35 or 40 years ago, 1977 and 1980, the original Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. So we'll throw that around as well. So hey, if I've got some Star Wars fans upset by that, that's all the better. 312-981-7200 is my phone number. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. Should we take a break now, Tom, or should we keep going? Yeah? We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. I got an interesting text here from someone from the 219 area code who said he's 68 years old. And he's like, really? You're in the communications business and you don't have a smartphone and you wear cologne? He says, lay off the cologne and enjoy your New Year's and get a smartphone. Yes, I've been told to get a smartphone. In fact, some of my friends have been very angry at me almost. Oh, come on, just get a smartphone already. I'm not trying to make any kind of a major statement by not getting it. I'm not anti-technology. Far from it. I embrace technology. I used to work in the technology world for about 10 years in the public relations side of it. Back in the 90s when the whole internet thing was starting. So I was there at ground zero. So don't believe me. Don't think that I'm some Luddite, or I don't like technology.
You were there with Al Gore when he invented the internet.
He invented, don't forget, the internet superhighway, the interactive superhighway, it was called back then. That was what the internet was called, the superhighway. Believe me. We used to use so many phrases. And then I remember introducing the high-speed modem for one of the companies I worked with. And we were calling it the internet on steroids because it had 4 megabits.
Wow.
4 megabits.
That's more than 3 megabits.
Now, if you have 4 megabits, you're screaming at your provider. 4 megabits is nothing. Most people have what? I mean, 4G is like 100, I mean, or whatever it is. But we were bragging in the mid-90s about having a modem that sent things along a cable line and were able to send them at 4 megabits. So believe me, I've been around I'm not a big texter. As I said, the main problem I have is not with the technology, it's with my genetics. I've got big fingers. I've got sausage fingers. And so to text is not easy for me. I hit 7 letters at a time. So I'm not a big texter. I don't have children, so I never had to get into texting kids when they were away and get into that whole thing. In terms of talking on the cell phone, I don't really call that many people. I'm not on the phone all that much. I don't play video games. I don't watch. If I'm going to watch a show or a movie, I would never watch it on my phone. Whether it's convenient or not.
Well, that's just a crime.
Yeah.
I tell people if unless you're on a flight or something.
Exactly.
If you're traveling, it's one thing. But
fine. But yeah, so I'm not trying to be like some anarchist or some, you know, anti-step. It's just I have gotten, I love reading these stories so much about people saying, oh, now I'm going to not get on my phone for a day. I'm like, hey, that's how I live my life. My phone, when I'm at home, my phone is in a drawer in the kitchen, and I'm in the living room watching television. Sometimes I don't even know if it's ringing or not. So that's just my lifestyle. I'm not trying to be, you know, anti anything. I don't really need it. Believe me, the one cool thing, and I should say, my wife does have one. So we, at least in the house, there is a smartphone if need be. But I don't really use it. But I have to say that when we're in the car, the GPS is an amazing technology. And I do use the GPS on her phone when we're going somewhere. So I must say I do indulge in that respect. But most of the time, if I don't know where I'm going, I will go on. Remember this thing called MapQuest? Well, I still go on MapQuest. Oh, look at Tom is shaking his head. You don't like MapQuest?
No, it's just... Who uses MapQuest?
I
might
do.
As well just bring out a map then. Just get a traditional map, draw
okay.
it out.
Well, you want to laugh, Tom, but if you go into my trunk right now, you will find an atlas.
You should.
You will find a paper atlas. Now, most of the roads don't even exist anymore that are on my atlas, but I have an atlas all the same, just in case I get lost.
I imagine it still uses Route 66 as
right,
your way to the best.
Yeah, 88 is called I-5 on my atlas. That's how old it is. But, when I go somewhere, I will go on MapQuest. I will put in my starting point, my destination. I will hit get directions. I will write those directions down on a piece of scrap paper, and I will take them with me. And that's how I get places. That is possible. And I should say, too, that this year, 2019, will also be a year that will, sadly, will always be in my mind because I lost something very dear to me, and it was my Samsung flip phone, which sadly was involved in a car accident in the summer. I unfortunately left it on my roof of the car when I was putting some stuff into my trunk. And I was going to Ravinia, in fact. I was going to see Ringo. And I usually put because my flip phone is so small and handy, which is another great aspect of my flip phone, I usually put it in the cup holder with my keys, especially in the summer. You don't have a coat or anything. So I was with my wallet and my keys and my phone. I'd put it in the cup holder. So it was just a, you know, second nature. So when we get to Ravinia, I park the car and I go into the well of the cup holder and I get my keys and I get my wallet and I don't see my flip phone. So I ask my wife, where's my phone? So I thought, well, maybe it fell between the seats. You know, maybe I didn't put it there right and it fell in between the seat. So I'm looking around and I said, wait a minute. I told my wife, just call my phone and we'll hear where it rings and I'll know where it is. And she called my phone. No ring. Ooh. I'm like, oh my gosh. So now, of course, I'm retracing my steps. And I say to myself, I left my phone on top of the car when I was loading stuff into the back. So my hope is that as I made the three-point turn out of my garage and down my driveway, that it fell off the roof and is sitting in my driveway. So I'm fairly confident that my flip phone is in the driveway. And that gets me through the Ringo Starr concert and that sense of well-being that the cell phone is fine. I don't have it. I do feel a little nervous and a little apprehensive, but I'm still confident that the cell phone is in the driveway because it fell off the car when I made my three-point turn. So now we're driving home, when my wife called it, my voicemail picked up, which meant that the phone is working. It's just that it's not with us. Okay, good. So I drive home now from Ravinia, and we're getting close to home. And I said, I pull up before our driveway, and I said, you know, call the phone now, because maybe it's out here toward the front of the house, and we'll hear it ring. And she calls it, and not only do we not hear a ring, but it goes straight to voicemail, which now lends me to believe that something's wrong with the cell phone. So we get out of the car. I don't want to drive on the driveway because now I'm paranoid of where it is. It's very dark as well. Thanks to my wife's smartphone, I must say, she's got a flashlight on there. Another good thing about the smartphone. So we look with the flashlight, and I cannot find my cell phone anywhere. I cannot find my flip phone anywhere in the driveway, in the garage, on the driveway, which is a pretty long driveway from the street all the way into the back because our garage is not attached. And so I'm like, oh no, where the heck could this be? I'm like, is it possible that this phone stayed on the hood of my car any distance? I mean, on the top of a car, how could it stay there? So I'm very frustrated, and then I don't watch Columbo reruns for nothing, folks, so I started to play detective, and I said, well, you know what? Okay, I had to pull and turn out of the driveway onto the street. Maybe let me look in the street. Maybe it fell out here. And that's when I found it. It looked like a scene out of CSI. Oh, the carnage. There were pieces of my cell phone in a straight line down the street. So clearly the cell phone fell off the roof while I made the turn out of my driveway. It was sitting in the middle of the street, obviously, for at least 45 minutes or whatever it took us to get from home to Ravinia. But sometime in between that Ringo Starr concert, somebody ran over my cell phone. And I actually had, remember when you'd watch CSI and they'd put all those little things with the numbers to show where all the pieces of evidence are? That's what it looked like with my cell phone. I had like 1 to 10. There were pieces of my cell phone all the way down the street, and I went and picked them up one by one, and oh, there's the keypad, there's the smashed top, there's the screen smashed. So it was very difficult to pick up those pieces, no pun intended. And just so you know, I didn't throw it out. I put all the pieces in a plastic bag. And my wife actually made a small little box that had a little RIP on it. And so I have the remains of my good old Samsung flip phone in that box. And that happened this summer in August. So that will be always a sad memory of mine. But I went out the next day. The best part of the story, I went out the next day. I called the Sprint store by my house. And I said, do you have flip phones? And the young woman who answered the phone said, I think. Let me check. She comes back in a couple minutes. She says, yeah, we have one here. And I said, oh, well, could you put, I'm only 10 minutes away. Can you put it on hold for me? And she says, yeah, I don't think I'll need to put it on hold for you. I
don't think a lot of people are going to be coming in for it. When I walked in, all the people that worked at the Sprint store pointed at me. When I introduced myself, as I saw, you know, I called earlier about the flip phone, they all pointed as if I was a freak of nature. But I have it, and we have a lease on our car, and our lease was coming up, so we swapped out our car, and so, you know, now every car has Bluetooth on it. And so my wife has the smartphone, and so we put her, you know, her phone hooked up with the Bluetooth. And so the salesman says, well, do you want me to put your phone on here? And so I was embarrassed to tell him that I had my flip phone. So I said, no, that's all right. He says, no, it'll take 2 seconds. So I'm like, ugh. So I said, well, I don't think this is going to even, you know, hook up. And he's like, whoa. But sure enough, you laugh at my flip phone. Apparently somewhere in there, not only do I have bowling and Tetris on my flip phone, I also have Bluetooth. So my car and my phone are synced up. Thank you very much. So I ask you once again, why do I need this smartphone? If I'm not texting all that much, if I'm not watching movies, my flip phone gets me around just fine. And even though I am still in mourning for the loss of my Samsung, I'm digging my cool pad. So there you go.
What if we get you the new Razer?
Well, yeah, see, now you laugh, but now Motorola is coming out with, and in fact, I was involved with the introduction of the Razer campaign when it came out in the mid-90s. And I had a Razer. That thing was, I loved that phone. It was so small. Even when it folded, it was so small. And back then, if you remember, those flip phones used to have a little antenna. Remember the antenna that you had to pull out? But, oh, I love that Razer. And what happened to my Razer, I left it once again in my cup holder, and I was at a parking lot here downtown. And I'm walking to my car one day in this parking lot, and I notice as I'm approaching my car, I see all this glass around my car, or at least in the area of my car. And as I get closer to the car, I look, somebody broke my driver's side window and stole my Razer because I saw it sitting in the cup holder. Stole my Razer. Unbelievable.
You might have to start chaining your phone.
I know. I haven't had good luck with my flip phones. But I love my flip phones all the same. So all I'm saying is, first of all, I think they're going to come back. And when they do, you're going to remember who's had a flip phone and who was the trailblazer of the flip phone. And then secondly, if you do get one, aside from, you know, what all this other, you know, apps that you can do, you'll find out that it gets along just fine. I bet you, if they do make a flip phone, they're going to make it more adaptable to have more apps because everybody lives with apps now. And we got on this subject because I was talking about how I really don't Uber. A, because I can't using my flip phone because I can't access the Uber app, but also I've also questioned the safety aspect of Uber. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that when we return. I am Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. We'll be here till 4 a.m. I'm going to be here till 4. I hope you will too. Well, right now we'll take a quick break. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. So the reason I went into a little story about my flip phone is because I just wanted to make the point that I do not use Uber. And I know that I am in the vast minority in that. But I'm still a taxi cab guy. Once again, call me old school, but I take a taxi cab, always have. I've taken one Uber in my life about 6 years ago, only because I was with a friend. And they Ubered with, you know, they said, let's Uber. I said, fine. The experience was perfect. Everything went well. Car was clean. The driver was nice. Got us to our destination. No problems. I didn't feel any, oh my gosh. But at the same time, it was strange to step into a stranger's car who just happened to be driving around. I know that that's also the concept of a taxi cab, but like I said, at least with a taxi cab, there are some regulations.
and some official legal vetting systems that the taxi cabs must go on. Now, believe me, I understand that some, you know, people may fall through the cracks, and not every taxi cab driver is, you know, the most upstanding citizen. Nothing against cab drivers. I love cab drivers. I take cabs all the time. But I understand that. So there, anytime you walk in, get into anybody's car like that, there's a social contract that we are accepting that I'm going to get into your cab and you're going to drive me where I need to go. And it's going to be a safe ride and I will pay you. And then I'm off to my spot and you're off to your next pickup. But the Uber thing did concern me from day one because I just didn't trust a company to do that vetting. I would think, especially for a company that's trying to ultimately go public like they did, you know, you want to get as many drivers as you can out on the road. You want to get those great statistics so you can up your value and up your interest in your company. And so I would think, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would just think initially, as well as up until recently when some statistics were released, that, you know, if there was a questionable person to be able to be an Uber driver, then I bet you Uber gave them the benefit of the doubt. And I've likened Uber to digital hitchhiking. Tell me how it's not. You are outside using your thumb. The only difference with Uber is instead of sticking your thumb out on the road to get a ride, you use your thumb to hit the app. But you're still using your thumb to get a ride. And you are riding in a stranger's car who happens to be driving around in your neighborhood. So I think that's hitchhiking. Now, the difference is that most of the time you didn't pay the driver who gave you the ride for the hitchhiking, but it's very similar. And I go back to when I was in grammar school. In first or second grade, I'll never forget it. I don't know, Tom, you're a younger guy. Did you ever have Officer Friendly?
Officer Friendly.
In your school, no.
I think we had similar stuff.
Okay, so yeah. We used to have a policeman called Officer Friendly. That was the program. He would come into the school and he would tell kids safety tips. And one of the main things that Officer Friendly drilled into us, even, and this is the mid-70s, drilled into you was do not get into a car with a stranger. In fact, they even, while you had Officer Friendly, they even named the person in the stranger in the car named Stranger Danger. You did not get into a car with Stranger Danger. If a car came up to you on the street and said, oh, your mom told me to pick you up from school or I'll give you a ride home, you did not get into the car with Stranger Danger. They didn't really tell us what was the possibility was, but they scared you enough to that I still remember all the hints that Stranger Danger told me. And all of those hints go right against the foundations of Uber, of getting into a car by your house where someone knows where you live because they live two blocks away. They just have me going by, and you get into a stranger's car. That's the Uber model, right? No question. Amazingly convenient. But wow, I think I think the Uber model also trades convenience for privacy and safety. And just this about 2 weeks ago or so, some statistics were released that in 2017 and 2018, more than 6,000 assaults were reported in Uber cars. Now, those are the ones that were reported. We don't even know how many may have happened that weren't reported, but at least 6,000 were reported. Now, Uber has gone out on a very high-profile PR campaign to say, hey, that only turns out that 99.99 of our rides are safe, and this 6,000 really amounts to 0.01%. That's too much, they say, but you should know it's a small amount. I understand that. But it still has to go back to the vetting process and the fact that people are getting into a stranger's car. Now, all of a sudden, Uber is, because of these facts and these stats, Uber has introduced a new emergency button on the app that if you feel that you're in danger, you hit it, and it immediately connects you to 911. There's some other new safety features. My question is, where were the safety features when Uber started? Did no one raise their hand in the room with the whiteboard and say, and what if there's some safety issue here? What safety precautions or what safety outlets or options do we give our riders? And no one raised their hand, apparently, until now, several years later. So, I don't know. Do you take Uber? Does that scare you? Or do you don't think about the safety factor when I tell you that 6,000 people have been assaulted in Uber rides? Does that ring a bell with you at all? Does it possibly change your opinion? Especially if you're a woman. Do you feel safe in an Uber when you're by yourself? Like, as I said, I understand being in a taxi is the same concept, but at least there are some regulations where the taxi driver is vetted. There's his picture on the dashboard there with a number behind it. And I understand on the app, there's the picture and all that stuff. I understand that. But you have to understand that there is a vetting process for someone to get a taxi's license. And there's also a vetting process to become an Uber driver. And I'm just wondering if the Uber standards are as difficult as the taxi restrictions are. And don't get me wrong, I have a lot of friends who drive an Uber, so I'm not trying to destroy the Uber business. But what I am trying to do is to make sure, because it is such a part of our culture now, what an amazing behavioral shift that has happened with this app. So clearly it's something that people want and people need. So I'm not putting that down. I'm not saying shut down Uber. But I do believe that they need to be held to a much higher standard in terms of the people that they hire to drive people, as well as when I'm in the car, assuring that ride is as safe as possible. I don't think that's outrageous to expect or demand, because this is a precarious situation. And as I said, maybe you've never even thought of it. Maybe just because it's become second nature. Oh, we'll get an Uber. But you're getting into a stranger's car. And did you hear the story that happened in the summer where a girl called for an Uber and some predator just pulled up and she walked right into the guy's car and was killed, I believe. I mean, my gosh, that was, talk about lamb to the slaughter. So I'm just hoping that this is a wake-up call for not only Uber, but also for you Uber users out there. Will this change your behavior? Or it doesn't matter. The convenience is worth the possible. It's not going to happen to me. How many times do we hear that? I don't know. 312-981-7200 if you want to talk about your Uber experiences. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 4 a.m. Phone number is 312-981-7200. We're talking about the safety of Uber. A few weeks ago, Uber released some statistics that were, I think, a little concerning. In the years 2017 and 2018 combined, more than 6,000 sexual assaults were reported in Uber cars. And I was talking about how I do not use Uber cars, and I initially felt that it was kind of a safety hazard based on the way the business model is set up. I understand the convenience. And believe me, I've been outside in the street looking for a cab sometimes at 1 or 2 in the morning and wondering how the heck am I going to be out here all night? And so, and I think from what I understand, the way that the Uber business was devised was, I think the two founders were out one night somewhere in France, somewhere in Paris, perhaps. And they were out, after partying or something, they were looking for a cab, and they couldn't find a cab wherever they were at. And a light bulb went on and said, why is it that here we are in this major city, and we can't get a ride home? And that's where the idea for Uber was born, the need for a cab at 2 in the morning. And I understand the need, and it's a great idea. But when you add that human element in, that's when things get a little scary. And I think you have to at least plan for that. I don't know if Uber really planned for that. Now, in the weeks since they announced these statistics, they have taken out full-page ads in the Chicago Tribune right after the statistics were released. They had a full-page ad that said 100% committed. And it said nearly 4 million Uber trips happen every day across the U.S. 4 million Uber trips a day. They say that's around 46 rides per second. That's an amazing statistic. And they say that 99.9 of those trips are without any reported safety issue. But even 0.1% is hard to accept. They go on by saying that they are committed to getting that number down to 0.00. They also announced that there is now an emergency button in the app that directly connects you to 911 with a simple tap. My question is, what took so long for that? Why wasn't that an option in the app from day one? It says our ride check technology can detect unexpected stops or possible accidents and provide you with tools to get you to the help that you need. They talk about the thorough background checks and the ongoing driver screenings. So they're certainly trying to counteract these statistics with some positive, proactive measures that they are taking. The another ad, full page. This was December 8th of this year in the Tribune. Full page. There's an emergency button in the app if a driver or a rider needs help. Giant full page ad by Uber. So they're certainly concerned, and they certainly are reacting. But I wonder how you, the Uber user, is reacting to these types of statistics and the overall experience that you have. We've got Gwen on the phone here. How you doing, Gwen? Good morning.
Oh, hey, good evening, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just got home from work. Thanks for I listen to you guys all the time. I just got home from work. But anyhow, just the gist of it, I was at a gas station shopping after grocery shopping, and I came upon, actually, there were four teenage kids. They were between, I want to say, high school and, yeah, I want to say last year high school, whatever. But, and you could tell there was one girl and three young guys, and they were, like, kind of joking around. And one, finally, the one that was joking around the most came up to me and said, ma'am, they said, we missed our last bus to Skokie. They said, they go, we were at the mall tonight. I go, well, don't you have an Uber account? And he's like, no, it's there were zero bands, whatever. So I walk in the gas station, and the manager there goes, what are they doing around? Why are they talking all this? And they were asking different people if they can get a ride home, and everyone was turning them down. And I finally, my parental instincts kicked in. I says, I'm going to get you a cab. And I beat the, he goes, I beat the, what do you call it, the gas station attendant to the punch. He goes, well, I'm going to call the police on them. Those kids didn't hear it. They were outside. So I go to my car, and I told the kids, I go, come over by my car and stay by me. And I called the my area district police station. I just said, you guys got a taxi? Because I didn't even have that in my phone. I go, do you guys have a cab list? They said, someone's getting a little whatever short fuse here with the kids hanging. The guy goes, no problem. The officer, so he gave me, was a taxi cab company, and I long story short, I told them I had some kids if they could possibly give a ride home, and they said no problem. So
wow.
It turned out
well,
to be smooth.
Wow.
Okay, just well, add to the story, there was like a little racial inclination there. I'm not going to get into detail. So the guy was like being biased, if you will.
But anyway, so the point of the story is that you did get them a cab, and they did take the cab home.
Yes, they did, and the cab driver had, yeah, the three kids, or four kids jumped in, one in the front seat and three in the back, and I said to the one young man, I said, aren't your parents home? He goes, well, my mom's working. I'm like, I'm thinking to my mom, your mom's probably doing what I'm doing, working at a hospital.
And so you're, you know? But so the cab did come, and so you went by the good old reliable cab.
Yeah. And they, because it actually came by, I'm sitting there looking at my phone and for all my, what do you call it, alphabetically, and I'm like, shoot, I don't have one cab listed.
Right.
So, but the guy, the manager gave me an idea. He goes, well, I'm going to call the police on them. And I'm like, oh, I ran out to the car and I called the district myself. I go, please hurry up, give me a number to a cab company. It's going to help some kids to get home. And they were like, they were very appreciative too. And then another customer in the gas station goes, did you just get them a ride home? I go, yeah, I did. And he goes, that was really nice. It was like 9:30, 10 at night.
Well, look at you. You are quite the good Samaritan.
Well, you know what? I used to pick up, my son would call me before he got his driver's license and said, Ma, we're stranded. So I think that kind of kicked in. And I took a good look at these kids. I was like, they're minding their own business and they're scared and they're trying to be polite.
Yeah.
You know,
well, good for you, Gwen. I give you a lot of credit for getting involved. A lot of people would have just walked away like the other people that you said had listened to their story and walked away. And you took a little interest. And it was nice to hear that your story had a good ending and that your faith in those kids turned out to be worth putting in there. So thank you very much. And that's a really a nice kind of a holiday story, too, but good for you, Gwen. I appreciate that. Thanks for calling in. So, Tom Hush is our producer tonight. He's always works with Nick. So, I have to say, I'm sure you are a huge Uber user, right?
Yeah.
You have to be.
Yeah, it's
you take an Uber home, like, when you leave here at 4 or 5 in the morning?
Oh, no, I take the bus.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Wow, you take the bus?
Yeah, whenever
wow, you're a braver
work.
Man than I am.
What are you talking about?
Oh.
It's nothing.
Oh.
It's nothing. I mean, I love the CTA. I know people complain about it all the time. It's public transit. There's going to be issues. But, you know, we're lucky to live in a city with an incredibly robust and useful public transit system. And I think you'd be, if you can use it, not everybody is able to use it for various reasons, you know, where they're going to work or where they're trying to get to might not be super convenient. But I think if you can use it, you'd be a fool not to.
So in terms of Uber, though, do these new statistics shock, surprise, or potentially change your view as to using an Uber?
For me, not particularly, but I try to think about other people and what their situation or experience might be. And it is alarming to know this. That's always been my one caveat about Uber is that almost literally anybody can do it. People who can I've been in Ubers where I've said, pull over, I'm getting out.
Really?
Yeah, because they could barely drive.
Oh, they could barely drive.
Yeah, there was once I took an Uber.
Oh my goodness.
Picked up an Uber, Michigan Avenue.
Right.
Middle of the day, pretty busy.
Right.
And this guy's literally driving around trying to figure out where north and south is.
Yeah,
well, he's got his hazard lights on.
Okay.
And I kept telling him, I said, dude, hey, man, you got to turn your hazards off. People are freaking out. They're just like, oh, don't worry. And I said, I'm going north. Go north. And then he starts going south.
Yeah.
So I said, pull over. I'm done. I'm not doing this. But, you know, I don't feel any particularly safer getting in a cab. And I take cabs sometimes if it's more convenient. Mm-hmm. I just want to get in and go. Don't want to have to pull out the phone or my
You know what I don't understand is, and if there's a cab driver out there or someone who works for the cab company itself, maybe you can answer this question for me. What I don't understand is there's no question that Uber has had an amazing impact, as I said, on, you know, not only in the business world, but on our behavior. People just, I mean, you know you've made it when a company, when people use your name as a verb. When you Google something, when you Uber, when you have a Kleenex instead of a tissue, when your name of your brand is used in a verb or even the noun for that, you know you've made it. So there's no question about that. But my question is, and maybe someone knows the answer to this, why haven't the taxi companies created their own app to combat this? They're almost laying down their arms and saying, oh, well, we can't compete. Why not? Why can't Yellow Cab or another taxi cab service create their own app and let me know where the taxi is, the closest taxi is to me, and I will call that taxi? That's what I don't understand. I don't know. It seems very simple. Tidings of comfort and joy, the stories of Chicago's very own, Chicago's merry own. WGN-TV News specials on Christmas Day at 5:30 and 9:30. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio.
We'll continue to talk about this Uber thing for a few more minutes, and then I want to go to the Pop Culture Club and talk about some of the cool things that's going on in the pop culture world. We'll talk to Michaela about Baby Yoda. We'll talk to him about Peloton ads. We'll talk to him about Eddie Murphy. We'll talk to him about a whole bunch more. So that's going to be on the Pop Culture Club in a few minutes. But right now, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Tarano filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. I just want to continue our little Uber discussion here for a few more minutes. What we've been talking about is the fact that over the last few weeks, Uber has released some statistics that more than 6,000 people have reported being sexually assaulted in Ubers in both in 2017 and 2018 combined. And what Uber is doing to combat this, as well as my view, I've always felt that the Uber situation was a little precarious in that I likened it to digital hitchhiking. You're getting into a stranger's car who just happens to be in your neighborhood, and you jump in, and you ask them to take you somewhere, and you don't really know if, like Tom, our producer, is saying, you don't even know if they know how to drive. You don't know if they know where they're going. And especially in today's world with GPS, most people don't even know their own neighborhood as opposed to going outside of their neighborhood. But I wonder if we have really at this point put convenience over safety. Or, as our caller Michael talks about, another aspect here. Good morning, Michael. How you doing?
I'm fine, Jim. How are you this morning?
Very good. So what's your kind of take on the Uber situation?
Well, first of all, I should preface this by saying I'm a police officer, so I have a little bit different aspect of it just based on the safety aspect of it alone. But knowing that, up until about a year and a half ago, I was a casual user of Uber, maybe four or five times a year, just if I was downtown or whatever the case may be. My wife and I, about a year and a half ago, were in New York City, and we were going from Manhattan to Brooklyn, which is where we were staying. And we hailed an Uber just like, you know, tens of millions of people do in New York City every day without incident, most of them. And we get into a Uber with this driver. And, you know, we started talking to the driver. You know, it's the usual Uber conversation. You know, how long have you been driving for Uber? Yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And all of a sudden we get on the highway and his driving changes. And I notice, I mean, I pay closer attention to that stuff.
Sure.
You know, more than most people probably do. So he would slow. We're on the West Side Highway. Speed limit had to have been 55 or 60 miles an hour. And he's doing like 30 miles an hour. So my wife and I are in the back seat, and we are just like, what is this dude's problem?
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, we're coming up to the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel.
Right.
The Brooklyn Battery Tunnel is a 2-mile tunnel.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Two lanes in each direction, and there is zero room for error.
Yeah, right.
Zero.
Exactly, yeah.
We get into the tunnel, and this guy is, like I said, there's no room for error. There's concrete walls on both sides. I mean, like, if you swerve even the slightest little bit, you're going to crash. And it's two lanes in each direction, and in the middle of the two lanes are these, like, plastic
rubber dividers. Yeah, there's no real divider. I've been in that tunnel. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And he took out, like, three of those rubber dividers.
Oh, no.
So my wife is in absolute hysterics. And when we get to the Brooklyn side of the tunnel, she's yelling at the guy to pull over. Well, in New York City, they are very protective of their bridges and their tunnels. So when they see some random car pull off to the side of the tunnel, we were immediately surrounded by three state troopers. And my wife and I got out of the back seat, and the troopers came over. They're like, what's the problem? You can't get out here. This is not a pedestrian area.
Right.
And I started explaining to them, look, this driver is obviously intoxicated. I don't know if he's on drugs. I don't smell alcohol, but he's definitely intoxicated in some capacity. I don't feel safe. The trooper tried to make us get back inside the car. And I said, are you out of your mind? I said, listen to me, I'm a police officer. And I showed him my badge, and I said, look, I am not getting back in this car. I said, we will gladly call a cab, whatever. He goes, well, you can't call a cab here. I'm like, great. Well, then would you please do us a favor and just give us a ride to the gas station, whatever?
Yeah.
I'm like, because I'm not getting back in this car. I don't feel safe. So long story short, once the trooper realized I was a police officer, he was like, okay, get in the back seat. I'll take you to the next gas station. But even if I wasn't a police officer,
right,
I did not feel safe in this vehicle. And actually, we get a lot of calls for service in the town that I work in for disputes between Uber drivers and their passengers.
You know, and don't get me wrong. Once again, I'm not pounding on Uber here to say that it's terrible and it should be closed down. As I said, I understand there's a need for it. I understand that people make a living from it. I just believe in every cab, believe me, I could tell you some horror stories that I've had in cabs. So sure. You know, there's no perfect system, but I do believe that at least the governmental or the industry regulations that a cab has may be more strict and have more bite to them than the Uber background checks and the Uber vetting of these drivers. And that's my only hope, is when I hear these new statistics about people getting assaulted, there's clearly a safety factor that needs to be addressed, and hopefully, I wish it was addressed when Uber started, but it clearly wasn't. But now we're realizing, people are coming to realize that this could be a safety thing, whether it's a sexual assault, which these numbers refer to, or your situation where you were in danger when that car was moving.
Yep, absolutely. And then I couldn't believe the troopers at the Brooklyn side of the tunnel
right.
That wanted us to get back in.
Right.
I'm like, there's no way I'm getting back. I'm like, you know what? If you really want to, arrest me for trespassing. I'm like, I'll take that over getting back into this guy's car.
And we should also mention, too, and Tom brought this up during the break to me, I also understand there's a huge price differential between the Uber price of a ride and a cab ride. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it costs more to, you know, to get this medallion, to get a cab. I understand what's going on there. And so once again, you know, people are, you know, putting maybe price differential or safety potential.
Well, and Uber has different prices depending on what time
right.
of day
yeah.
you're trying to hail.
But still,
the Uber.
Overall, it's overall cheaper than a cab, I believe, though. Right.
Yeah, I would imagine typically it is.
Yeah.
But and then didn't Mayor Lightfoot just pass some kind of bill or whatever that, like, if you're within certain boundaries of the city limits and this time,
I think they're talking
like
about a lot of major cities are doing that, where they will actually tax you if you are driving in the city in order to try to find revenue. I don't believe that's been passed, but I know that a lot of major cities are thinking about that. Thanks so much. I'm glad that you got I'm glad you got to your destination safely, Michael.
we did, and you know what? I guess I should be somewhat thanking the guy. He did give me a great story to tell for the rest of my life.
There you go. Take care.
Based on that experience, I'll never take an Uber again. I deleted the app off my phone. I haven't used it since.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Michael. Yeah, I mean, like I said, everybody's got their horror stories, but I just feel like, you know, the idea of getting into a stranger's cab. Or a stranger's car like that, without really feeling all that confident in Uber doing as much of a background check or adhering to the regulations that a cab does, I would just feel that maybe people are putting the convenience of an Uber ahead of and the price differential ahead of their safety. So I don't know. I'm sure I've talked to a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of women about this, and I've thrown them the statistics, especially with the sexual assault, 6,000 people in 2017 and 2018, and they still didn't seem fazed by it in terms of that they were going to stop. So I do think, sadly, in our society today, there is a sense of false security. A lot of times we hear so much about people, walking and they're getting in trouble. And half the time you always hear, it was a woman walking alone at 2 a.m. by an alley or on a street alone, or not even just a woman, but a man too. They could certainly, get in trouble. And it's like, there's this, I was in this neighborhood. I thought I was safe. You know, there's no neighborhood that's completely 100% safe, folks. So you always need to be looking around. As I said, I hearken back to what I said earlier. Officer Friendly always told you about stranger danger. Be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of your circumstances. And always be, sadly, a little skeptical of a stranger who comes up to you. That's just reality. you know, that's street smarts. You need street smarts to get by in this world, folks. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio here at WGN. Phone number is 981-7200. After this quick break, we're going to go to the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler and talk about some of the interesting issues and topics that are going around in the little pop culture zeitgeist. So stick around for that right after this break. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. That music can only mean one thing. It's time for the Pop Culture Club.
Oh,
get it? And our resident pop culture guru that we talk to frequently on this show is good old Mick Kaler. Good morning, Mick.
How you doing, buddy?
Very good. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy New Year to you.
And happy Festivus today.
Yeah. Oh, is today Festivus as well?
Cause yeah.
Because
November 23rd.
Was also Hanukkah. Was the 22nd, started yesterday. Hopefully everybody had their potato pancakes.
Sure, the latkes.
You know, I found out, I did Ancestry.com
yeah.
a few years ago. I have always been fascinated with the Jewish religion and the Jewish culture, and I love Yiddish, you know, the Yiddish language.
The term, sure.
You know, like Shlemiel, Shlemazel.
Schlep.
Schlep. Naches.
Yep.
And Bupkis, of course.
In the, Mensch.
You know, Mensch. Yeah, I mean, you know, Bupkis from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yep.
Bupkis means a lot of nothing, and that's what I get from you.
That.
Yeah, and part of the reason that I learned a lot of Yiddish was from watching many of these 60s and 70s television rerun shows, because many of the writers were Jewish.
Right, they put the vernacular into
and
the
they
actual
were
script.
Yeah, they were from that era, and they would throw in many of these Yiddish phrases and Yiddish words, and I was always wondered what they were, so I'd go up and look them up, and I would start to use them. So I've always been fascinated with the Jewish culture, and I love pastrami.
Sure.
You know, I love a good
on
deli.
Rye.
I love a good deli. And so, sure enough, I did the Ancestry.com, and it came back to what I expected. My dad was Italian. My mom was Polish. And I pretty much was right down the middle. I think it was like 42%, you know, Italian, 40% Polish, you know, from the Eastern, you know. But there was this other 17% that was floating around, no pun intended,
yeah,
in my saliva, and 3% of that saliva is Jewish.
See, there you go. You were pulled into it naturally.
Boychik.
Oi.
Oi, Boychik. I wish you naches. So... I do wish. So I was actually flirting with, even though I was born and raised Catholic. I'm one. Maybe even though it's 3%, which is not a lot, but I'm been thinking of. I really should officially embrace my Jewish roots, all 3% of them. And so I was thinking of getting a menorah.
Okay.
You know, and maybe
Mazel Tov,
and maybe even doing some latkes.
Okay, and get out the dreidel.
Get out my dreidel. Yeah. I mean, I do talk with my hands, so, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that can also be Italian.
No, believe me, it's very Italian. But, yeah, but I was actually really, I got a kick out. I'm like, yes, maybe there was something. Why was I, you know, even though it's 3%, there was something that attracted me. I remember I used to work with a guy that was Orthodox Jew. And he would tell me about some of the really cool things that they would have. This there's this one of the Jewish customs is to have some kind of like a sukkah. It's called it's a hut of some kind.
Okay.
And they go out into this hut in the yard, and they have some kind of a ceremony there. And then he would wear some kind of apparatus on his head. Even when we were like on the road, like, you know, on a business trip, he would bring this with him.
Okay.
He was very, orthodox and very into the religion. And I was just really, I mean, you know, the Catholic religion certainly has its own traditions and things like that as well.
Right, accoutrements, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but it was interesting to be, introduced to that side as well. And now I find out, what, that they're not my people.
Well, it's funny because I used to work with a Jewish teacher, and I was actually invited to her temple for Hanukkah celebrations.
Oh, really? See, I've never been to a temple.
And went and danced to a klezmer band, which was a lot of fun. And then a few months later, I went to a Passover event at their temple, and she used to ask me, would you like to join our temple?
Look at that.
Her name was Barb. I said, Barb, I love you, and I love your church, but I can't give up Jesus. I'm sorry.
I can't give up Jesus. Now, I would love to go to a Seder.
Yeah.
I would love to go to a Seder. As I said, you know, I was born and raised Catholic. I was an altar boy. I went, you know, 8 years to Catholic grammar school and 4 years to Catholic high school. So believe me, I mean, that's my, at least my religious foundation as a young person. But I'm always open to learning about different cultures and different religions. And as I said, I've never been to a Seder. But, you know, hey, I could wear a yarmulke with the best of them.
I bet you could.
Yeah, my friend. But, yeah, I do love... In fact, a friend of mine one time bought me this great dictionary. It's the Dictionary of Yiddish.
Okay.
So I could just look up all the words.
Right, know the whole deal.
I believe that the term, that you know, that shlemiel and shlemazel?
Right, from Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, well, so a shlemiel is somebody who spills soup, you know, spills their soup. Right?
Okay.
But the schlemazel is the person he spills the soup on.
Oh, so you're the victim. You're yeah. The goof or you're the
yeah,
victim, right?
Exactly. But, you know, you want to be called you used mensch, very nice, and you used it in a very good, and you used it in the correct way. Yeah, you want to be called a mensch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, it's funny. Have you ever seen the documentary called Supermensch about Shep Gordon?
Yes, I have. Yeah, the music promoter, yeah.
Yeah, and entertainment mogul in so many ways. Yeah, that's a really cool thing. And that really described him as a really good person to so many people.
Yeah. Now, someone just texted me and said that a Seder is for, is around Easter, and right now it's Hanukkah. No, I understand that. I'm just talking about, in general.
Passover was a few months after Hanukkah.
Yeah,
right?
I would just like to, I know that that's a very, special kind of meal, and it's got its own traditions, and I think it would be cool to experience that. So there's anybody, if there's an empty chair, hey.
You got to leave the door open too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just let me know. I'll be there. I'll be at your Seder. I'm a Seder guy. So I wanted to have Mick on to talk, as we usually do, about some pop culture topics. But first I should say that you can hear Mick Kaler's work on a regular basis on the WGN News. On a regular basis, Mick and his partner Al Flash write parody songs based on some of the current events going on either in the news or even to do with the WGN News team. And I believe you have a new song that you just released, right?
Yeah, we took the melody of the song Old Town Road, which was pretty much the big song in pop music this year, and we changed it to From Old Town Road to Year That's Done, and we basically did a retrospective of the news that happened in Chicago this year, from Lori Lightfoot being elected to the teacher's strike to the Cubs not doing well, etc. And then we added in some lyrics about things that happened on the Channel 9 morning news, like Larry Potash's new show Backstory and some other stuff like that. And they played it a couple times this week on the morning show, and they really, I mean, they always tend to like our stuff, but this one, I think it really kind of lit them up, where they're like, wow, that was really something. So
that's
it was
cool.
A lot of fun to put together.
Yeah, so if you are a viewer of the WGN morning news, and it seems based on the ratings that most people in the city are.
They sure are, yeah.
Yeah, then you certainly will or have heard some of Mick's songs on there, and I'm sure that as 2020 approaches, you will continue to do that.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty to go.
So, some cool, interesting news that just happened a few days ago. After years of being pretty much in hibernation, at least from an entertainment standpoint, comic, wunderkind at one time, Eddie Murphy has emerged big time. He's in a new movie. I believe he even got a Golden Globe nomination for the Dolomite movie.
Right, on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be doing a Netflix comedy special as well soon. And I think he has just finished filming a sequel to Coming to America with Arsenio Hall. And to top it off, he returned to the spot where it all began on Saturday Night Live. And he hosted the show for the first time in many, many years. And did you get a chance to see it?
I sure did. And it was what I've seen online and from people I've talked to, same thing. Everybody loved it because it brought them back to the days of when Eddie pretty much saved Saturday Night Live back in the early 80s.
Yeah, and I have to say, I said at the top of the show, even though and for the most part he basically reprised most of his classic characters like Buckwheat and Gumby and Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, the thing is that not only, I think, did they come off not just kind of hacky or just done for nostalgia's sake, but they actually did it in a very cool kind of, current way.
Right.
And it was, so to me, it was very fresh and very fun. I remember it like you do when it first happened. Now, Tom is 25 years old. Tom, our producer, did you ever know of the Eddie Murphy, classic bits like Gumby and Buckwheat? Do those resonate at all with you?
I mean, it took a while because when I was introduced to Eddie Murphy, he was a film star.
Right.
He was already
right,
in the Nutty Professor.
Movies, yeah.
Yeah. And
did you even know who Buckwheat was?
Not until much later.
Really? Yeah.
But the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood was one that was very popular.
What about Gumby? Did you know who Gumby was?
Yeah, because as a kid, I loved Gumby.
Oh, so you had a Gumby. So you knew who Gumby was.
Yeah.
Gumby was still around in your childhood.
Yeah, Gumby was still a thing. And my dad thought it was so funny because he only knew Gumby from the whole thing with...
So he never played Gumby? With Gumby, your dad?
No, he did not.
I had a Gumby. Didn't you have a Gumby,
Nick? So did I. I had Gumby and Pokey.
Gumby
sure.
And Pokey. Pokey was the horse.
Yeah.
In fact, he made reference to Pokey in the skit,
right?
That they did on Saturday Night Live. But yeah, I thought they did a nice job of making it current and fresh, and at the same time, nostalgic for those of us who remember it back then. And we actually have a little clip. Which one do you want to play here first?
Let's do a little bit of the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Okay.
Now, the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, if you don't know the concept of this, when Eddie Murphy did it, everybody knows Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So back in the mid-80s, Mr. Rogers was still on, by the way, at that time.
Yeah, still a big deal for kids.
Yeah, it was still a big deal. But Eddie's view of it as Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood was a sketchy guy who lived in the black neighborhood and was looking at life a little differently than the Mr. Rogers did.
He was in the hood and kind of a rundown house or apartment,
but he still pretended and acted like Mr. Rogers with the sweater and the gym shoes, and yet was showing what life was like in his neighborhood as opposed to the perfect little neighborhood of Mr. Rogers. And I thought they did a great job of updating it for this century. And here that is.
Who could that be? Let's go see, boys and girls.
Who is it?
It's Damien and Mika from 7F.
Damien and Mika are my new neighbors. They paid $1.2 million for an apartment where Mr. Robinson's friend Frankie used to cook crack. Let's see what they want.
Hey, Mr. Robinson, sorry to bother you. We ordered a new 72-inch Samsung TV, and they said it was delivered, but it's not in the lobby. And we were wondering if you knew anything about that?
Don't worry, boys and girls. Mr. Robinson knows just what to say in situations like this.
Oh, you think I stole your TV because I'm black?
No. Oh, my gosh. No. Of course not.
It always works, boys and girls.
We would never do that. What? No.
Yeah, we're asking everyone. It's not just you.
Yeah, I'm sorry we gave you that impression.
Yeah, and we'll get out of your hair.
Yeah, we are so sorry. If you see the TV, let us know.
Oh, and we'd love for you to come to our holiday party.
No, nobody want to come to your damn holiday party.
Yeah, and it was funny because when he first started the bit, and he started to talk about how the neighborhood changed, I knew the exact word he was going to say that happened, and it was gentrification.
Yeah, so the whole idea was, you know, that Mr. Rogers lived in, Mr. Robinson lived in a pretty rough neighborhood. Well, now, you know, in the 20-teens, those neighborhoods have all been gentrified, and they're all rebuilt, and all the rents now are, you know... several thousand dollars a month in these, you know, previously dilapidated homes are now, renovated and going for high prices. And Mr. Robinson is still living in that neighborhood. And there's a great visual payoff. You can go online and look at the whole bit. It wouldn't really play on the radio, but it's certainly worth checking out the whole skit there. We're going to take a quick break. I want to talk more about this because he did a great skit with bringing buckwheat back. And if you remember when he did buckwheat, he used to sing, and buckwheat was one of the characters from The Little Rascals. And that's why I was asking Tom if he knew who buckwheat was, because I don't even know how much The Little Rascals have really transcended time, even though it was a movie in the 90s.
That's the one I watched.
Late 90s, yeah.
Yeah, that had The Little Rascals, but Our Little Rascals, where buckwheat goes way back into the 20s and 30s with Spanky and Alfalfa and all those old black and white, our gang comedies. So we'll talk about that and a whole bunch more in the Pop Culture Club with Kaler. But right now, we'll take a quick break. No switching. Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. I'll be here till 4 a.m. We started at midnight today as OB and Hamp were talking about the Bears game. Oh, wow.
Just brutal. I love listening to those guys because...
Oh, yeah, well...
They tell it all like it really is.
And all I have to say is, at the beginning of this season, you go back to my Facebook page, I predicted Bears would be 7-9. They would not make the playoffs. Right now,
there's a good chance it could happen.
They
now,
are 7-8, and they are going to be playing the second-place Vikings, who that last game of the year will mean something for the Vikings in terms of the playoffs. So that's not going to be a gimme. And so I believe people say, Jim, why would you have said that? I mean, the Bears were 12-4 last year. They were going to go to the Super Bowl. I feel like that 12-4 record last year was a mirage. Their defense.
Well, they were totally charmed. No injuries, no issues.
Well, and not only that, but the defense either scored majority of their points or set them up with fumble recoveries and interceptions. If they didn't score on them, they set them up at the 20-yard line.
Yeah, and it was going to be a tougher year this year, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, and they had a tougher schedule. And as I said, I went, and first of all, everybody screams about, the double doink last year. If the Bears were truly a 12-4 team, as their record said last year, then they were playing an 8-8 Philadelphia Eagles team. The game should have never come down to the last second.
A
12-4 team is supposed to wipe away an 8-8 team. So I felt there was a lot of manufactured hype. There was everybody wants the Bears to be good. Even the NFL wants the Bears to be good because they're good for the NFL when the Bears are good. But it's the same script every year. It's the same script every year. Bad schedule, good record. Easy schedule, or then a tough schedule, bad record. Next year, easy schedule, good record, and it goes. And it's the same script. I saw an article today, because now this is the end of this decade. The Bears were in the playoffs two times in 8 years or in 10 years.
That's how frustrating.
It's been 35 years since the 85 Super Bowl. So, what do we have to show for it, folks?
Yeah,
somebody needs to be held accountable here, and the last name begins with an MC.
Right. Well, it's funny you mention that, because a couple weeks ago the Steelers were on a national game. Do you know the Pittsburgh Steelers in 50 years have had 3 head coaches?
That's what I mean.
3.
How crazy
Chuck
is that?
Chuck Noll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
And they were mentioning, they said, and that comes from the top. That comes from the Rooney family running the Steelers and running that organization the right way.
Exactly.
3 coaches in 50 years.
Yeah.
Name me a franchise in any sport that's had that.
The Bears have had 50 coaches in 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they go through.
So we were talking about Eddie Murphy hosting Saturday Night Live a couple of days ago on obviously Saturday, and we played the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood cut a bit of that. But Eddie did bring back many of his classic characters, including, of course, Buckwheat. Now, we were talking about the fact that I wondered if Buckwheat, the character, would resonate with younger people. Now, Tom, our producer here, you're our resident millennial meter. anything that's possible with a younger person, I just go to Tom. So sure. You're my official person to bounce stuff off. So you remember the Little Rascals from the really bad movie.
Well, I didn't think it was bad at the time.
Well, because you were a little kid.
I loved it. I watched it on VHS.
Oh, really? So you thought it was good?
Oh, at the time, yeah.
Really?
Every day I would watch it on tape.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so, but now that was certainly a little more of a saccharine version. The original Our Gang comedies, of which the Little Rascals were a part of, were like in the 30s and 40s. And, yeah, some of that stuff really reflects the time. And,
yeah, it certainly wouldn't fly today.
Yeah, it would not fly today. Although I mean, some of the comedy is still hilarious with Spanky and Alfalfa and Porky and Darla and obviously Buckwheat. There's the one with what is that? The International Submarine Band, and they play live in a recording studio, and all their instruments go. And the greatest bit is the engineer is in the other room. And they play so off key that his hat blows off every time they start playing, but yeah. So now when Eddie Murphy did the Buckwheat character, the Our Gang comedies were still being shown in reruns on television.
Right. Young people were familiar with it way back then.
So even though I was not around when my dad used to watch the Our Gang comedies, but they were still around in reruns for many years, the originals. And so we knew who all those characters were. And also, I believe, even though some people may say that the Buckwheat character was stereotypical, which it was at the time.
Yeah.
But I think Eddie Murphy was not playing into the stereotype. He was kind of showing how Buckwheat was used as a stereotype, but he was making Buckwheat popular.
Right. I even remember the Saturday Night Live bit when Buckwheat got shot.
Right. Oh, yeah. There was a big, little subplot because
right,
he had become...
Right, exactly. And they're making him, again, a contemporary character way back in the early 80s.
Yeah, so I think that Eddie Murphy's portrayal, while he... And you'll see. I mean, the whole idea was that Buckwheat kind of did not talk very well, and did not pronounce the words very well on the show, and that's what he did when he would sing these songs. Do we have time to play the cut? Yeah. So here's a little bit from Saturday Night Live as Buckwheat comes back by Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I sure do. Take a missing.
And the best part was that, again, they made it contemporary because Buckwheat was playing on that show, The Masked Singer.
Right, exactly. So he was on the show, The Masked Singer, and he even did a song by Beyonce, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Single Ladies. So, yeah, I thought he did a great job of coming back and bringing a little fresh air to those classic characters. So they were nostalgic for us, and hopefully they did resonate with the younger audience. And if they didn't, hopefully those younger people will go back, because they certainly have access to all this stuff now, and go back and watch some of the original Eddie Murphy incarnations of those characters.
Yeah, and it could be a big groundswell of, again, like you said, interest in him. Kind of reminded me of, remember back in the mid-80s when MTV played the old Monkees TV show?
Right. Oh, that was huge.
And then all of a sudden the Monkees became the biggest thing in concert, attendance.
Yeah, definitely. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. We're going to continue talking about pop culture. Quick right now, a very quick break. So, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Also be here tomorrow. I guess today. Yeah, I shouldn't say tomorrow. Today, later today at 11 p.m. I've got about 12, how many hours off? And I come back and then do from 11 p.m. till 4 a.m. And a highlight, I think, hopefully, for you as well as me, because I'm going to enjoy doing it, at about 11:30 tomorrow night. Or tonight, I keep saying that, tonight, Monday night, at 11 p.m. is when I'm on. At 11:30, I'm going to do a one-man presentation of A Christmas Carol. So that's going to be fun. We've got you know, some nice sound effects and everything. So that might be a new tradition for you and a reason to stay up as we head into Christmas Eve officially by the time I'm finished with that. So that'll be very fitting. And who knows? Maybe a ghost will show up at your house. I've got Mick Kaler on the phone here in the Pop Culture Club. And on the phone, I've got John. How you doing, John? Is John there?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, this is John. You're talking about the Little Rascals. We're coming up on the 100th anniversary of them.
Wow, it's 100 years ago?
Isn't that crazy? Well, wow. It'll be 1922, and there are different groups of Little Rascals. And the fun thing is some of the members of the silent comedies outlived the kids that were in the sound ones.
Well, you know, the funny thing is now, I'm sure to younger people, this name will not mean anything, but to some people that might be a little older, you remember the very prominent actor, Jackie Cooper, who had a very long career into the 70s and 80s. He
became president of Columbia Pictures.
Yeah, he was on...
He directed some episodes.
Yeah, he was on The Little Rascals. He got his start as a child actor long before even... Spanky and Alfalfa Ron, he was on when Chubby was on, or Tubby. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right. Chubby replaced a guy called Fetcher.
Yeah, well, John, you got your phone is breaking up there. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Oh, okay.
Buckwheat and Porky lived until the 70s, but Darla died in 1979, and Alfalfa died in the 50s. He was a victim of a hunting accident.
And people will also remember that Alfalfa is in It's a Wonderful Life.
The one that pushes a lever that opens the covering over the swimming pool and all the dancers fall in.
Yeah, he in the beginning of the film, you remember, he likes Mary as well, and she likes
right.
George, and so to get back at George, he opens up the gym floor, and there's a pool underneath, and George and Mary jump in. Little does Alfalfa know that by doing that, he pretty much sealed their romance.
Right, he bothered them.
Yeah.
Two quick other things. Spanky lived into the 80s, and the creator of the Little Rascals, Hal Roach, lived until the 1990s, and he set up the Academy Awards, and Billy Crystal came out and was lauding him at the awards, and they had a live microphone for Hal Roach, and he was accepting his award, and it cut out.
Oh, jeez.
And so Billy Crystal said, well, isn't it ironic that Mr. Roach
right.
is starting the sound era of motion pictures?
And
Hal Roach lived, he finally got an Academy Award for all the great Little Rascal comedies that we still see on TV.
And fans of the show Cheers may remember that Spanky made a cameo on Cheers.
He did.
Yes, he was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was on. If you remember Cheers, they used to do a real short little minute before the opening credits, and Spanky was sitting at the bar.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was a reunion show in the 50s called As You Asked For It, and they reunited the original silent actors from the Little Rascals together, and they got to meet their teacher, and Alfalfa said he became a social worker. Not Alfalfa, but Farina.
Oh, Farina. Well, and of course their teacher's name was Mrs. Crabtree.
Oh, yeah, she was a little blonde. I saw her on the TV show one time in the 60s.
Yeah, there was...
She wore a wig.
Oh, did she wear a wig? Yeah. John's cutting out there, but thanks for your... John has a ton of Little Rascal trivia there. Very nice.
Wellspring of information. That's
My
great.
My goodness, that's great. 100 years. Thank you for that call, John. I did not... I knew that the Little Rascals were in the 20s, but I thought it was later on. Wow, 19... You know, he said, what, next year in 2020 it'll be? Or
2022, I think he
said. Wow. Holy smokes. Yeah. The reason we're talking about Little Rascals is because Eddie Murphy hosted Saturday Night Live on Saturday night, obviously, and reprised his role as Buckwheat, singing as part of the show The Masked Singer, which really was a smart idea. That was a really good idea.
They did a nice job.
Yeah, he was dressed as a corn cob.
Big glasses.
With big glasses on. And then he wound up singing a bunch of songs. In fact, he did Respect. He was like, R-E-S-P-E-T-S-T-E-D.
You know, there was was also, if you caught it, Eddie let out a little swear word at the end of that cooking segment.
Yeah, he did another skit where he did like a cooking segment, and I think he said the S word, right?
Yeah, he did. And then someone else, I think at the end, at the end of the weekend update, there was one of the women cast members let out the F word.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, well, that's why it's live television, folks.
There you go.
I should say that a few people texted us, and we should also mention, I mentioned Jackie Cooper. We talked about Spanky and Alfalfa and Darla and Porky. Don't forget Robert Blake, TV's Beretta, was Mickey.
Played Mickey.
He played Mickey. And he, God, was he a cute little kid.
Yeah.
And he was on The Little Rascals as well. And,
sure.
Yeah, a few of them, you know, very few of them went on to anything great. Like I said, Alfalfa was in a couple of films that you may see here and there most prominently, especially around the holidays here. We'll see Alfalfa. If you watch It's a Wonderful Life in the next couple of days, if it's on, or if you've got your own copy, you will see Alfalfa toward the beginning. And he does not have the colic.
Right.
And he does not sing. But, I guess we talked about Saturday Night Live. I thought Eddie Murphy did a good job. What I want to talk about as well here, in fact, why don't I wait until after the break, so I'll just do this quick tease. So, Mick, have you seen The Rise of Skywalker?
Yes, I did. I saw it 2 days ago.
Oh, good. Then we will talk about that because Tom saw it as well. And I want to get your impressions on the film and also want to talk about the most unlikely phenomenon and the thing that has actually stole more headlines that is Star Wars related has nothing to do with the most anticipated Star Wars film of the whole series, this last chapter. And it took everybody, I think, by surprise and by storm. And who would have thought it was a baby, of all things?
Okay, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So we will talk about that and more in the Pop Culture Club. But right now I need to tell you this, that there are tidings of comfort and joy and stories of Chicago's very own. Chicago's very own WGN-TV news specials on Christmas Day at 5:30 and 9:30. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. We'll be here till 4 a.m. Got lots of fun stuff left until then, though. So hope you'll keep it up, or tuned right here. And I hope you'll stay up with us until then, until right now. We're going to take a quick break, and there'll be no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Just looking at the text. Yes, as I said before, the Little Rascals actually gave birth to a lot of future stars. Probably the biggest name to come out of two of the bigger names. We mentioned Robert Blake, who became TV's Beretta in the 70s. And then you may remember Robert Blake got into his own headline-making personal life where he was accused of killing his wife. Was it his wife or his ex-wife, Mick? Do you remember?
It was, I think it was his wife, and I think he was not accused of killing her, but being in on the plotted murder for her.
But he was acquitted.
Yeah,
he made it to. It was right around the time of OJ, so it was very ironic that we had these two kind of high profile celebrity murder cases. Even though at that time Robert Blake had not been a household name for many years.
No, not like OJ had been. Yeah, right.
Although he did play a very eerie, weird, and very cool character in the David Lynch film Lost Highway, which was very
I remember
cool.
that. Yeah, it was very creepy.
Yeah, it was very creepy in that. It was very good. And I tell you, as Mickey on The Little Rascals. Robert Blake was as cute as a button. He used
right,
to wear those little.
Yeah.
He used to wear those little overalls.
Yeah,
and he was like, "Oh, gee, fellas." He was the nice
little
guy.
Chubby cheek.
Yeah, he was really nice guy. And there is another text. I just want to make sure. No, Jackie Cooper. There is the actor's name is Jackie Cooper, who was on Little Rascals and went on to become a very noteworthy actor in his own right. The texter mentions Jackie Coogan. No, Jackie Coogan was a child star.
Right.
But Jackie Coogan was not on The Little Rascals, and of course most people know Jackie Coogan as who?
Uncle Fester.
Uncle Fester from the Addams Family. And you want to get really into trivia, Jackie Coogan also played a role on The Brady Bunch. Do you remember that role, Mick?
No, what did he do?
It was an older Jackie Coogan. He was a little big in the chest and guttle area, but he played a guy who accused Mrs. Brady of hitting him in her car with her car.
Oh, yeah. The accident. I remember that.
And
yeah.
he put on a fake, you know, kind of brace on his neck.
Yeah, the neck brace through the lawsuit thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't remember which kid or Alice or Sam or Oliver or somebody wound up making sure that he turned his head.
Right.
And so I think, or maybe Mike did or something, because I knew he was faking. And he turned his head, and they said, "Your Honor, how could he turn his head if he's got you know, whiplash?"
Right.
And so they won the case. So I mean, you want some Jackie Coogan trivia? I have it for you, Mick.
You're loaded.
So we're talking about child actors, but who would have expected that the biggest child actor? I mean, at this time of the year, we celebrate the birth of a baby, the birth of a special child who was born a long time ago. I never would have expected that a special child born in a galaxy far, far away would have created such a stir. And I'm talking about on this new Disney Plus TV show called The Mandalorians, which was kind of just low-keyly announced. You know, Disney got into streaming, and you're a streamer, right? Part-time streamer, Mick?
Not yet. I'm going to get back to Netflix in a little bit.
Well, Disney entered the streaming world on November 12th, and they mentioned, hey, we're giving you access to all our vaults, all the things that we own, all our classic movies from the past, all our classic movies like Frozen and Lion King from the present, all of our Pixar films, our Toy Stories, all of our Muppet-related things, and, of course, all of our Star Wars vaults. All,
sure, they own that now,
yeah,
too, right?
Everything. So, amazing. I mean, for $6 or $7 a month, I mean, you know, my gosh, what a deal. So, but they also said, oh, and by the way, there's going to be a Star Wars-related series called The Mandalorians that Jon Favreau is going to be, you know, involved with in directing, and that'll be on there, too, for you Star Wars fans. But it wasn't really made a big deal about.
No, it was very low-key compared to the library of the other stuff.
Right, and then, of course, we have been waiting now since the date was set several years ago that December 20th would be the release date for the new film, The Rise of Skywalker, which was just released this past week. So there, in the Star Wars universe, everybody has been obsessing on this new film. And where was the story going to go with you know, Rey and Kylo Ren and Palpatine coming back and boop, ba, bop, ba, beep. Everybody's been, you know, leaks and spoilers and trailers. And amidst all this, you know, anticipation and hoopla for the new Star Wars movie, which is now the last chapter of the Skywalker saga, this Mandalorian quietly is released on Disney Plus. And in the midst of, I think, the second or third episode, all of a sudden, a small blanket is pushed down to reveal a baby Yoda.
Yeah, baby Yoda, which I've seen all over the internet now.
The cutest thing you've ever seen. The ugliest, cutest thing you've ever seen. It's like Grumpy Cat.
Right, big eyes.
Big
and all
eyes,
that.
Big ears. I mean, you know, not so much hair like the Yoda. But, you know, if you loved Yoda, you got to love baby Yoda.
Oh, sure.
And so all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they did not hype this. They did not leak this. I got to hand it to Disney. I don't know if they if this was dumb luck or if they knew they had this ace in the hole and it was going to be this phenomenon. But instantly, when baby Yoda made his debut, I mean, he became a literal overnight, not even overnight, over minute sensation.
Right.
And now everybody wants to watch this Mandalorian and maybe subscribe to Disney Plus to see this baby Yoda. So say what you love about Disney, but my gosh, they are either the luckiest company or the shrewdest marketers in the world.
They're geniuses as far as plotting this stuff out, pal.
Yeah, I mean, how great is that? And they played this Mandalorian release so low-key that you never would expect that not only this little baby Yoda, which is cute as can be, but also this kind of subtle tie to the classic Star Wars characters and legacy would be there. And so much so that they didn't want this to get out that, of course, Disney, and especially Star Wars, is based on merchandise. They did not even create Baby Yoda toys.
Right.
Because they didn't want any word to get out beforehand. And obviously, you know, they would have had to have manufactured these toys and showed them to retailers and toy conventions, and word would have gotten out, and they certainly would have not have created the stir that it did when this suddenly just popped out by complete surprise to those who were watching The Mandalorian. And now you can actually pre-order your Baby Yoda toys and get them in May.
Right, now there's a big fever for them.
And I even saw on Saturday Night Live last week, they did a Baby Yoda skit on the news.
Oh, that's right, they did on that Weekend Update, you're right.
Now, do you think that they knew that this would be a phenomenon, or was it just kind of like I just wondered if they realized how big this would be, or they just thought it would be kind of a cool little nod to the old fans.
I think they knew all along, and they just didn't want to overload us with so much stuff that they said, let's just let this grow naturally, kind of organically.
Well, what's ironic is, as I said, amidst all this hype and all this anticipation for the Rise of Skywalker film, about a month before this Baby Yoda, because we still don't know if it's a Baby Yoda of the character Yoda, we don't know if it's a relative of Yoda, or we don't know if it's of a species of other Yodas. So we don't even.
Sure.
So there's this mystery surrounding. So obviously, Star Wars fans are out of their minds. What is this thing? how does it fit? What is it? And so, I mean, incredibly, the Baby Yoda phenomenon actually overshadowed the release of the Star Wars film.
I know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, who would have thought? I mean, everybody's been waiting. You know, this December 20th date has been etched in so many people's minds for at least the last couple of years. And this Baby Yoda phenomenon, and like I said, now you go on Amazon and you can order official merchandise, pre-order it now, and you get it in May. So I'm sure a lot of people already, but think about it. They really, and they bypassed the Christmas buying season.
Yeah.
For that secret. Boy, I'll tell you, I give them a lot of credit, because in this day, I mean, look at, you know, Donald Trump can't even make a phone call without a whistleblower, but nobody blew the whistle on Baby Yoda.
Well, look at it this way. There was already enough Star Wars merchandise being sold with this new movie coming out at Christmas, so they're thinking, hey, you know what? Come middle of the year, let's make some more money and do it with Baby Yoda.
Yeah, unbelievable. So Baby Yoda.
Wealth, yeah.
So now the film is out, and people are discussing it, and you saw it, and Tom saw it. So after, we can take a quick break, and we'll talk about some of your reactions to The Rise of Skywalker. But ironically now, just when you thought the end of the Skywalker saga was complete, it was here with us. This Mandalorian thing dangles a small little thread. It's not Luke Skywalker per se, but it's a Baby Yoda, and Yoda actually is, you know, what attracted me to the Star Wars franchise, even before, you know, even after the initial movie came out. And so there is this faint little thread that connects the original saga there with one of its most popular characters. Once again, a master stroke. Walt Disney himself would be very proud, I think.
No doubt.
Yeah. So we'll take a quick break here. We're talking to Mick Kaler in the Pop Culture Club. I'm Jim Toronto. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, what does it say here? Yeah, Jim Toronto. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. I have Mick Kaler on the line here. We're talking pop culture. And just so you, I want you to know, yes, if you are a regular listener, of course, I have my festive pin on my overcoat, and I've had it on there since December 1st.
It's not a festive pin, it's a brooch.
No, it is not a brooch. As I've said many times before, first of all, if you're not aware, for many years I wear this small little wreath that at one time was a small ornament that was on my mom's Christmas tree, and I sort of turned it into a lapel pin. And it's very old, and it's falling apart. It's put together with a safety pin. But it has its own beautiful festive charm, and that's why I call it my festive pin. Now, some people, who will not be named, have called it a brooch.
Because it is.
Now, as I've said many times, It is not a brooch, because brooches are more associated with something that a woman would wear. And so, as I have said for many years, and I will continue to say, as I will always wear my festive pin, that brooches are worn by mature women, and festive pins are worn by virile men.
Is that what the deal is?
That is the deal. So, yes, well, folks, I do have my festive pin, and it is on my overcoat, and has been, and I have received several compliments, as I usually do every year.
Well, you know, here's the deal. You saying it's a festive pin is like when people collect when they collect dolls and call them action figures. They're dolls, no, folks. This... Whether it's Superman, Spider-Man, or Star Wars, they're not action figures. They're not moving. They're dolls. That's a festive pin. It's a brooch.
Like, it's like comic books are not graphic novels.
No, exactly. Yes, not literature, folks.
It is a comic book. But no, but I, while I agree with you on those, I must vehemently disagree with you and say that the object that I wear on my overcoat is indeed festive, and it is indeed a pin.
Which is basically subtitling it a brooch.
Well, I guess you say brooch, I say festive pin. You say tomato, I say tomato.
There you go.
And also, if you've been on my Facebook page the last 20-some days, starting December 1st, actually, I'm a huge Santa fan. Our house is completely, every spot in the house is decorated with some kind of Christmas decoration. And I love Santa, so our house is pretty much, I'm a big Santa fan. My wife is a big snowman fan, so our house is pretty much red and white between the snowmen and the Santas. But what I've been doing over the last 24 days, and I will have one this morning, and then I will have one on Christmas Day as well. I'll have one on Tuesday and then on Wednesday. So I have a couple more to do. I have been featuring one of my favorite Christmas decorations that are currently up in the house. And so I am already now on to day, 23 when I do it this morning after I get home.
I swear you could open up, I've seen those pictures. You could open up your own Christmas store.
Oh, I believe me. We probably could. If you walked into to my house, you would be like, whoa.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have a lot of Elton. You know, funny thing is I think I have like 10 bins of Elton stuff. I have 15 bins of Christmas stuff.
Yeah, it's scary.
Oh, but I love as I love the line from A Christmas Story when they're waiting in line to see Santa, and that kid has the pilot glasses on.
Oh, the goggles, yeah.
Yeah, and he goes, "I like Santa."
That's you. And then I'm Ralphie trying to turn you around, right. Like, "Yeah, I'm busy, kid."
I like Santa. So, so you did see The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I saw it a couple nights days ago, yeah.
And Tom, you saw it as well, right?
That I did.
Okay, so I did not see it because I didn't want to sit in the front row.
It's a big seller.
And get vertigo. I can only imagine, especially that movie, with the sound going on and then all the action. I mean, to
see the effects of the lasers and the spaceships. Yeah,
in the front row. I mean, I think after a while your nose would start bleeding. You'd probably have to get some kind of a medical emergency. So I opted to wait to hopefully the next couple of days, maybe after Christmas, when the lines thin out. Now I must ask you, Tom. Tom, what did you dress up as?
As a man.
You know who else is a man? I'm a man. And Mick, what did you dress up? Were you Princess Leia again? Were you General Orgasma? What's her name?
I showed up in my jeans and T-shirt and jacket and just sat like a normal human being.
What is Leia's name now? Commander Orgasma? What is it?
Leia Organa. Come on. That's her name. That's her last name.
Yeah.
Oh, is Organa?
Yeah, she's Leia Organa.
Right.
Why, who did she marry?
Well, I mean, I don't know if her and Han Solo actually got married, but no, she's a princess.
This is her adopted name when she got adopted.
Yeah, Leia Organa.
I didn't know that. So she's Carrie Fisher, who had passed away a couple of years ago, is in this film because I guess luckily for Star Wars fans, there were some scenes that she filmed before she passed away.
They had footage they were able to use, and I think they might have used a couple stand-ins on some of like the shots where you see the back of her head.
Now, Tom, were those scenes that were filmed for The Last Jedi or for The Force Awakens?
I believe that they were filmed for The Last Jedi.
Oh, say from the last film, then.
Yeah, they're from that era. Okay. So they're technically from Rian Johnson's movie, but they were probably second unit. They were just taking care of those scenes.
Second unit. You know, second unit. So what did you think about it there? We'll go with Tom first. Now, you are, how would you, where would you put yourself on the Star Wars fan scale?
And I'm enough of a fan to get excited when a new one comes out, and I'll go see it. And I own all the Star Wars movies, but not so much that I'm much for dressing up. I don't have, like, tattoos and stuff like that.
And so without giving out too much away, even though, I mean, once again, I haven't seen the film. There's a lot of people who haven't, although we were looking at some of the numbers. I guess the final tally was, what, $175 million
or something? Yeah, a little over $175 million.
Which was not a bad number, but I think Disney has got to be disappointed in that number. Right?
Well, not any. They're not going to be more disappointed than with, like, when they did the Han Solo movie. That was a really
good. No, but I think that being the final chapter of the Skywalker saga, I think they would have expected this to be a $200 million opening weekend, don't
probably,
you think?
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
So, where would you, one to four? But what if we go one to five? I don't like the four star. I like a five, because this way you could say two and a half.
I'm going to say probably a two.
Oh, wow. Yeah. A two out of five.
Mm-hmm.
Mick, what about you?
I gave it a three, and the bottom line is, and this isn't spoiling anything, it was what I expected. I looked for the saga, the Skywalker saga, to be completed, to wrap up the details of what was going to happen or what they wanted to happen with nothing new or nothing special. There's a couple little surprises in there. It was okay. It's not, I don't think it's great.
Wow. And my gosh, now, Tom, two stars.
Yeah.
So what do you think was the biggest deficiency?
The biggest deficiency is that it's 2.5 hours of a movie running at a breakneck pace that is full of fan service that doesn't necessarily need to be there, and basically pretends that the previous film did not happen and is more of a sequel to Episode 7, which came out in 2015. You could basically not watch The Last Jedi and more or less have a resolution, which is a mistake. I think J.J. Abrams, while he's a very talented producer and a very talented guy overall, he's not very good at ending things.
Right.
He pretty much jumps ship whenever things get close to ending. He's great at starting stuff, like Lost.
Right.
That was like one of the most watched TV pilots of
and
all
then
time.
That went into, how that ended, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That went to places that was ridiculous.
Yeah, he jumped ship. There was no plan. He never had any plan for any of this. And he gets the luxury of getting to seem like he's doing everybody a favor. A lot of people did not like The Last Jedi because of how it approached the source material. Personally, I thought it was brave. I thought it was bold. It was different.
Now, who was the... Because even for this last film, J.J. Abrams came in after the original director was let go. So who was that?
That was Colin Trevorrow, who has the distinction of also making a really bad kind of reboot, Jurassic World. He did the original Jurassic World, which made a tons and tons of money, ridiculous amount of money, but is a totally bankrupt, like, creatively movie. I would never even watch it.
Yeah, so clearly something was amiss there, and the people at Disney and Lucasfilm, which is now owned by Disney, Kathleen Kennedy is the head of that, who was a George Lucas protege, put the skids on that and brought J.J. Abrams back, who did resurrect the series back in 2015?
2015, I think it was.
Yeah. With The Force Awakens. Now, what I find interesting is, you tell me, both of you, since you saw it, you just made a comment here, so tell me, did we get a real ending?
I think we did, but I think Tom brought up a great point that it was 2.5 hours and there was all this fervent action that was just like, this means nothing, this is overkill. You know, my favorite scenes are the scenes where, you know, Rey and Kylo Ren are either dealing with each other or dealing with the dark side, you know, the more quiet scenes, but there are very few of them in there.
Well, and Tom also mentioned a key phrase here that I want to define and also bring up a point on. And you mentioned fan service, and that's becoming now a new catchphrase that we are hearing, especially amongst these different kinds of shows or movies like Game of Thrones or Star Wars that, you know, create such a fan base that, that their fans are obsessed and are almost living with these shows as if they are real.
Yeah.
And so the idea of fan service means that the story serves what the fans want it to be.
Right, yeah, they kind of interpret it that way as opposed to what an original story might be.
And, you know, this kind of, as a movie fan and as a former movie critic, what bugs me about that is that, okay, then, you know, I understand that people, they want this to end a certain way, but it's the audience's job to react. And it's the creator's job to create and to have a vision. And it's
right.
The audience's job to watch that, react to it, accept it, or reject it. But we as the audience really should not have input as to how a creative venture, whether it's a movie or a television show, everybody, the Game of Thrones people were up in arms about the finale of Game of Thrones. Oh, why did that happen to Targaryen? That's not the way it should have happened. And you hear this term fan service, and most what it means is that fans today are so invested in this that they think that they have a right that the creators, you know, make the story according to the way they want it to be to satisfy their ending or what appeals to them, as opposed to what the original creator may have in mind. And I think you're corrupting the entire creative process.
Right. Basically, it's the tail wagging the dog.
I mean, put it this way: if we had fan service like we apparently do now, would Mario Puzo or Francis Ford Coppola killed Vito Corleone in the first movie?
No, exactly.
I don't think he has a heart attack in the tomato bushes.
Right. Well, and keep in mind, I think some of this is an offshoot. Look at television shows where a character becomes so popular, the show focuses on that person, whether it's Fonzie from Happy Days. You know, which, you know, Fonzie was a side character. He wasn't supposed to be
a
big deal.
Far from it. Yeah, he was far, you know, at the beginning, he didn't even wear a leather jacket.
Right. Or in Big Bang Theory, where Sheldon took over basically the whole show, you know, and everything became, you know, Sheldon-centric. And now movies or series, like you say, like Game of Thrones and stuff like that, they're starting to say, oh, well, you know, the fans really like this, and the fans really like that, and they expect this. We'll bow to them, as opposed to, as Tom mentioned, just have your vision and say, this is what it's going to be, like it or not, we've got it done, we've got an ending, we're not going to worry about what the fans think.
Well, and a perfect example of that, and this happened, you know, probably now, you know, 15 years ago, if not more, but think about the controversy, and think if we would have had, once again, fan service, this new jargon that we have. Think about the ending of The Sopranos.
I was thinking of that, too, exactly.
It is still debated. It is still people looking at it like it's the worst ending of a TV show ever, or it's the best ending of a TV show, or it's what it is, what it is. And we don't know if Tony Soprano was killed. We don't know if, you know, the hitman walked past him. We don't know what it is. But at the end of the day, it was not fan service.
No, it was David Chase saying, this is what we're going to do.
Right. And David Chase, the creator of this story and the creator of these characters, had every right to end that show the way he wanted. Now, I'll tell you, I have switched on this. When it happened, I did feel cheated.
Right.
But as time has gone on, and now as I've seen this fan service slogan that clearly now studios are beginning to cave into this pressure because of the power of social media, and because these movies cost $200 million to make, they want to make their money back. Like Tom was saying, that this current movie almost completely acts as if The Last Jedi, the movie before this one, didn't even exist. That movie did stray from the basic Star Wars formula, and it did create a disruption in the fan force of the Star Wars universe, and a lot of people did not like the direction it was taking, and clearly Disney was like, you know what, we need to get back to all those elements that everybody likes.
Yeah.
And from what you're telling me and what Tom is telling me, especially with a 2 out of 5 rating, that while they delivered a fan-friendly movie, what you're saying is they probably didn't deliver a very memorable movie.
It was the movie that I think some people wanted, but not the one that we needed.
Very good.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I'm still going to see it. I mean, I'm obliged to see it, I think.
Well, you're committed now because you've seen
Yeah, I've seen all the other ones.
So.
But I am a little disappointed in this new trend we're hearing. I'm hearing this word more often, and I'm not liking it because it really is taking away the creativity and the whole idea. I mean, you know, talk about fan service. If anybody watches the classic television show, The Twilight Zone, the whole idea of The Twilight Zone was to pull the rug out from you.
Exactly, which was a fun thing to do.
And if you're a creative, if you're writing this from a creative, you know, I mean, hey, look, there's some movies like rom-coms and things that have to give you that happy ending. But some of the most important movies or important TV shows or important books of all time do not deliver the ending that most would expect.
Right.
Including that one book about a guy who gets crucified and then rises from the dead.
Sure, there you go. Classic.
I don't know if that's fan service either.
No.
So I think we need to let the creator of this art do what they want, and it's our audience's view to react to it and accept it or reject it, but not influence it.
Good point.
And on that note, I will say that before we tell you about the 2020 WGN Chicago calendars, we want to say thank you, Chicagoland, because for the last decade, you've been loyal supporters of these exclusive WGN calendars. But sadly, the time has come to retire the line. So in honor of that, 2Ks has crafted the 2020 calendar to be the best ever. It's a true commemorative edition. For this final compilation, they have selected 12 of the best Chicago images from prior years and made it even more elegant, featuring best-in-class materials. Each calendar is made to order with a personalized name in every image. Wall and desk calendars with special date personalizations are available as well. This timeless keepsake is a must-have for fans of these specialized calendars, for business associates, for friends, and for family. This final commemorative edition is a celebration of Chicagoland and the legacy of these calendars. So own a piece of history. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll to the feature section to order your calendar today. That's WGNradio.com. Scroll to the feature section and order your calendar now. It's about 2:50, and this forecast from the WGN Weather Center. Today, Monday, December 23rd, mostly sunny skies with some very mild air for this time of the year. I'll tell you, that's for sure. Afternoon high temperatures could reach 57 degrees at O'Hare. Wow, 57. It was snowing on Halloween. On Tuesday, Christmas Eve, continued mild weather. Highs reach the 50s for a third straight day. Some patchy mid-level clouds keep temperatures above freezing at night. On Wednesday, Christmas Day, extensive cloudiness, thus holding temps below the 50-degree mark for the first time in 4 days. Partly cloudy, no white Christmas, but hey, you know, watch the movie. Thursday, December 26th, a little break in the clouds will allow for temps to warm back into lower 50s. Again, amazing for much of the area. And on Friday, a cold front finally approaches from the west. We get some thickening clouds to bring an increasing chance of showers as the day goes on Friday. The high temps in the middle 40s, rain will be likely overnight. Right now at 2:51, the current temperature at O'Hare is 38, Midway is 37. And at the lakefront, it is 39. I'm Jim Tirano, filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll be back right after this with more of whatever this has been, right after this message. No switching. Jim Tirano with you here this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. And we've got Mick Kaler on the phone in the Pop Culture Club talking about some pop culture topics. And we're talking about The Rise of Skywalker. Now, Mick, you saw the film. Where would you put yourself on the Star Wars scale?
A little bit less of a fan as far as you know, owning the films and that than Tom. I would, well, here's what, let's put it this way. I saw the ones in 77, 80, and 83. I did not see the middle three, even though those were the original, you know, the original three of the story. And then I saw these three. And I do it out of curiosity and interest, but certainly not fanaticism.
Well, here's the thing. And this is my dirty little secret, which I will now reveal, you know, to the world, or as much as is listening. But look, in May of 1977, the original Star Wars came out. At the time, we were filled in a time in the 70s. It was a very tough time culturally, movie. We had, you know, high interest rates, high inflation. We had just got the Vietnam War ended. There was Watergate. The movies of the day were The Godfather and Taxi Driver, you know, and very you know, very personal, very violent, very emotionally charged movies with a lot of anti-heroes.
Yeah.
These kind of losers who we somehow were rooting for. So it was a very difficult time. And along came this film called Star Wars that no one, including the people who made it, the certainly 20th Century Fox, the studio, nobody was expecting this movie to do anything. And basically, it was a return to those kind of movie serials that they used to have at the theaters. Before television, people used to go to the movie theaters every week, and there were these adventure serials, like, you know, Flash Gordon or Tarzan, where they would have recurring episodes every week to make you come back.
Right.
And they were just...
have cliffhangers, right.
Yeah, they had cliffhangers. They were filled with a lot of adventure, a lot of good guys and bad guys. And basically, that's what Star Wars is. Star Wars is. The story itself is very simple, and it's very basic. And it's basically a Western in space.
Right, with good versus evil.
Yeah, I mean, we've got good versus evil. We've got Darth Vader wearing black. We've got Luke Skywalker wearing white. We've got lightsabers instead of six-shooters. We've got, you know, Millennium Falcons rather than covered wagons. And, you know, so it's basically a Western out in the galaxy. And, you know, while the effects were certainly cutting edge for the time, probably now they look, you know, almost, you know, prehistoric.
Right, low-key, yeah.
Yeah, but nobody was expecting this movie to... And I don't know about you, Mick, but, you know, I wasn't a big sci-fi fan because most of the sci-fi that was released at that time was terrible. It was B-movie grade. It was Plan 9 from Outer Space. It was hubcaps with bad strings showing, flying around to space as flying saucers.
Yeah, I was the same boat, yeah.
And now this movie came out, you know, everybody says, well, Jim, you know, I mean, you're too old. No. I'm not that old, and the fact of the matter is Star Wars came out when I was, what, 12 years old. So that's right in my wheelhouse. I should have loved this movie. I should be one of those fans screaming.
Yeah.
But I have to be honest with you. I did not see the first Star Wars when it came out.
Oh, you never did. I did, and I heard all the hype. It was out for about a month,
and
I went to see it with some friends.
That's what scared me away from it, the hype.
Right. Well, I thought it was okay, but The Empire Strikes Back was great.
Well, so here's the thing. So, you know, the movie comes out, becomes this phenomenon.
Yeah.
To the point where it was so big, you know, Darth Vader was on the cover of Rolling Stone. I mean, it was everywhere. And so then that started to turn me off, and I was never a big fan of sci-fi because, as I said, at that time, in my lifetime, there wasn't a lot of great sci-fi except for maybe, you know, Space Odyssey of 2001.
Right, it was just too hokey.
But that was, you know, way over my head for when it came out. I was 3 or 4 years old, if that. So I didn't see Star Wars, and so I sort of felt a little out of touch with it. But people have to remember, too, in that time period, after a movie played at a theater for 3 or 4 months, it was gone.
Right, it never came back. That was it.
You maybe saw it on TV 4 years later, all chopped up with commercials, but you didn't have access to it like you do now.
Right, and there weren't the sequels that there are now.
Right, but the movie itself was gone from the theaters, and you never saw it again until maybe you saw it on TV. So the 3 years go by, and what really, to your point, what you just said, what drew me to Star Wars was I saw an early picture of Yoda.
And you fell in love.
I was like, I don't know what that is. but it looks cool.
And I got to know him.
And I got to see what he's all about. I was right. Just that little picture of that little Yoda with his cane. You know that little picture you used to have of him holding onto his cane with his little his little robe on? I was so immersed into him. I actually went to the store and bought the Yoda figure. And when I went to see Empire Strikes Back, I brought the Yoda figure with me.
Okay, now you're starting to scare
me. Yeah, see, I know. See, I always take it to the other extreme. But yeah, so I actually came to Star Wars late to the game.
Yeah.
With the second film. And so here's my basic view of this entire thing here, and we're going to do this pretty... Do I take a break? Let me just say this, and we'll let this hang for a couple seconds here. Out of the 9 movies, we have to debate how many of them are really good, and we'll take a break right now. No switching. Good morning, Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here for another... 50 minutes or so as we make our way toward Christmas Day, only a couple of days away. And please, later on today, Monday, at 11 p.m., I'll be right back here filling in for Nick until 4 a.m. And around 11:30, I will be presenting a one-man version of A Christmas Carol. I will be doing all the voices, even the women. Yes, the ghosts. Yes, Scrooge. But even the women, too. And you say, Jim, how can you do that with that deep voice? Well, you will find out, hopefully. And this will become a new holiday tradition that you will love to snuggle around your Christmas tree or your fireplace and listen to see just how can one man play all of those roles. Are you looking for that? Forward to that, Mick?
I look forward to it. Can't wait.
Yeah, I can tell your voice is so...
The one-man band does it again.
Well, I can't get anyone else to be up this late to play the other roles.
That's right. So it's like you got to do it yourself. You're self-sufficient.
Hey, look, it's not because I want to.
I have to.
You know how many fans and Ghosts of Christmas Present I called? What time? No, sorry.
Can't do it. Yeah. Sorry.
So I'm thrust into doing a one-man show. It's not about ego. It's about necessity.
Well, you're committed to it, so I admire that.
So we were talking about the Baby Yoda phenomenon that took hold of the whole world literally overnight, within minutes, about a month or so ago when Baby Yoda premiered on the Disney Plus streaming service and the new show, The Mandalorians. And as I said... I was first attracted to the Star Wars series, not by the first movie that came out in 77, but by the second movie, The Empire Strikes Back. And as you said, that was a great movie. And most people still consider that film, which came out in 1980 and which did feature Yoda, one of my favorite all-time characters, as the best of the lot. And I'm asking both you, Mick, and Tom Hush, the producer, with the release of the new film, has that notion really changed?
No. I think my two favorite movies, and again, I did not see the ones from the late 90s, the ones that were supposedly the first three of the saga, but of the six I've seen, my two favorite are The Empire Strikes Back, and I like The Force Awakens, and that's it.
Okay. And now you said you own all the films, even the prequels?
Yeah, because those were the ones that I... kind of grew up with.
That sets you up. Yeah,
I only got to see the original Star Wars movies in theaters because they did a re-release in 1997.
Right,
And I was born in 1993, so I was like
still,
super young.
Wow, yeah.
I was literally like, I could barely sit still. I was too young to really take it.
Sure.
So 1999, 20 years ago, I'm 6 years old,
right.
So I'm just old enough to really sit down and watch a movie, and then The Phantom Menace comes out.
Yeah.
Everybody else hated it. I had no concept of it because I was just like, wow, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I'm 6 years old.
Well, see, and that's the thing. We were talking earlier about this notion of fan service, and what you've said is exactly true. You have to remember that that's a perfect example in that, you know, today this Rise of Skywalker film comes out and we've got people that are 26 and people that are in their 50s and some people that are in their 60s and people are in their 40s, and they're viewing this not as escapist, fun, children-oriented entertainment, they're viewing this now as their Godfather.
Right, yes, it's their classics, right.
And it was not meant to, initially was not meant to have that much weight and that much philosophical meaning, but it has taken on such a huge part and consumed now two generations that people, you know, are obsessed and live by this philosophy of the Force that they've forgotten that at the end of the day, you almost have to take a step back and look at it through the eyes of a 10-year-old. So my question then now to both of you would be, since you saw the movie, what if you were 10? What would you think? What would a 10-year-old Tom Hush think of the new film?
I would probably be so bewildered that I would probably really have liked it.
Really, because it was just there's a lot of going on and there's explosions.
But
and
I will throw this out there: seeing that Star Wars from 1999, Episode One,
right?
That movie, people often bring up, oh, they're movies for children. Usually, like, we're talking about between, like, 10 and 14,
right.
Usually, is, like, really the sweet spot, because they still buy the toys, they still do the whole thing.
Right.
Let's not forget that those movies from the late 90s, early 2000s are centered around, like, entirely political conflict. There's, like, Senate room scenes.
Sure.
There's stuff that literally didn't make sense to a six-year-old. It's easy to get caught up in big laser swords and blaster battles and everything, but these are movies that I think are about as, even though they're mostly rated PG-13, this is about as general audience as you can get. There's stuff that adults can enjoy
but
in it because
new
it's yeah I mean all of them
oh,
really
all of them, right yeah
there's stuff that adults can enjoy because there's war and fighting and romance and all that kind of stuff. That's stuff that appeals to any adult really most of the time, and then the kids get caught up in like their colorful characters, they swashbuckle, they do the whole thing. So they are children's movies, but they are also teen movies. They are also adult movies in the sense that pretty much literally anybody could enjoy this movie if it spoke to them.
Well, I think that, you know, ironically, I think that George Lucas, to your point, I think George Lucas got caught up in the hoopla. I think when George Lucas created this, as I said, it was escapist fun entertainment. And then Star Wars began to take on this gravitas. And this prequel that you're talking about, these three films, were dense in exposition and as you said, political stuff and deep storylines and so much of it. You're like, wait a minute, where's Chewie?
You know, yeah, where's the fun? Right?
Yeah, where's just the fun little quips and the lines and the camaraderie of the characters? And instead, we were introduced to new characters and different perspectives and things like that. And I was just watching a show recently talking about the entire Star Wars franchise, and one of the original producers was saying how George Lucas's first wife was someone very important to the first three films in that she would read the story. She was involved in film. They met in film school, and she would talk to him when he was writing these scripts and writing the first film. In fact, and I think he also did the Return of the Jedi, the last of the first three. He didn't do the second one. Lawrence Kasdan did that,
and then the third one was directed by Richard Marquand.
Yeah, but she would say, "Whoa, this isn't working." Or this scene is not right.
And she was a sounding board.
Yeah, and she had the ability to tell George Lucas that something wasn't right.
Right.
Well, they divorced after Return of the Jedi. And when those three films that you're talking about, the three prequels, came out in the late 90s, now George did not have that trusted sounding board that could tell him something was wrong without any ramifications. In terms of people that worked for him could get fired.
Yeah.
If they said, George, this doesn't make sense. And so I think he lost his way. And so, you know, he winds up selling the Star Wars franchise for $4 billion and has been a little critical of the new direction. And apparently he was consulted about on his input, especially for this last movie, of where he wanted it to go. Not sure how much they took his advice. But he has been a little critical of this. And all I could say to George Lucas on that point is, because you made those other three films that were so not in the spirit of the Star Wars story, and that were so dense and so filled with minutia, and with a terrible leading man in Hayden Christensen, who was not up to the role of Anakin Skywalker at all. He was a pretty boy at best, and certainly not the type of guy who was going to be able to make a transformation into the worst villain in the history of movies. And so when Disney bought it for $4 billion, they almost had to go back and make a remake, basically. Like you said, you like The Force Awakens, Mick.
Right.
It's basically a remake of the first movie.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it had that spirit, yeah.
Well, it has, you know, it has a young girl who doesn't know her parents, just like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah,
you
know, kind of revisited.
It's got a Darth Vader and Kylo Ren. It's got a new droid R2-D2. It's got a swashbuckler just like Han Solo. It's got all the elements. It's the same movie. It's even got the same desert scenes, practically.
Yeah, they basically went retro on that, right?
But they had to do that because they had to say, you know what? George Lucas alienated the Star Wars people with those other three movies. You know, the Phantom Menace and the Attack of the Clones and the Revenge of the Sith, that we have to get these people back in the tent.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they had to do.
Yeah.
That's why I like that one.
Yeah. So, but I think, in all honesty, now I have not seen this one, but I have seen the other eight. And so as far as what I'm hearing from you two and what I'm reading, I would have to say, not as a crazy Star Wars fan, but looking at it from an objective point of view, there are 9 Star Wars movies, and maybe 3 of them are good.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say the first one, Empire, and then you could take your pick. I'll give you one more. Out of the other.
So 3 out of 9. That's a 333 batting average.
So think about that. This amazing movie franchise that sold for $4 billion. And at the end of the day, out of the 9 movies that it encapsulates, maybe a third of them are really solid good movies.
Right.
That just goes to show you what a phenomenon that first movie really became, and how deep-rooted that it was able to carry even through more or less than stellar, no pun intended, movies that came to follow it.
Yeah. Well, I think Tom brought up a good point about the universality of the stories, that it just became something that everybody, no matter how your age, young, old, whatever, you could gravitate towards and just fall in love with. And, again, some people take it to the, you know, fanaticism of buying a Yoda doll and bringing it to a movie theater.
Which
is super creepy, but whatever.
Hey.
But that's part of the charm, I guess, of the whole franchise.
I'll let that one slide, Mick.
If I had seen that, I would have called the police. You know, there's a guy who bought a ticket for a Yoda doll next to him, and I think you have to remove him from the theater.
Hey,
please.
Now they're dressed up. At least I had it in my pocket. Here's the forecast for the WGN Weather Center. Monday, December 23rd, that's today, mostly sunny skies with very mild air for this time of the year. Afternoon high temperatures could reach 57 officially at O'Hare. Tomorrow, Christmas Eve, continued mild weather. Highs reach the 50s. On Wednesday, Christmas Day, extensive cloudiness. We'll still be hitting we'll be below the 50-degree mark for the first time in a few days. Thursday, the 26th, will be breaks in the clouds, will allow for temps to get back to the 50s. And on Friday, December 27th, cold front approaches with some thickening clouds with high temps in the middle 40s. Some rain will be likely overnight. Currently, the temperatures are 38 at O'Hare, 37 at Midway, and 39 at the lakefront. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. Let me tell you that for news at 10, watch WGN with Micah Mater, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and, of course, Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. We'll be back right after this break. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Got Mick Kaler on the line. We're talking some pop culture topics. One thing I did want to mention, Mick, something that's sort of been floating over the holiday season. It happened maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I'm just wanted to get your call on this, being sort of a pop culture observer, whether this was a real controversy, or was it just one of these little social media kerfuffles that, you know, it's just like, oh, get over it.
Okay.
Did you hear the controversy about the holiday TV commercial for the Peloton bikes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Saw the commercial. Jim, I saw the commercial 3 or 4 times before the, quote, controversy came. I didn't understand the controversy.
I know.
I saw a woman who was not fat, not overweight, not even chubby, who was looking forward to, she got this gift, and she's, oh, this is great. And she's a little nervous, a little excited, and she's going to get on this cycle and start exercising and start doing it. She even says, let's do this. She's all excited. And I was like, okay, that's really cool. She wants to get in, you know, better shape or stay in shape or whatever. Great. And then I hear all this hubbub.
Yeah, I mean, so if you haven't heard what happened here, there, you know, Peloton is this exercise bike. It's a high-end bike.
Right, $2,200.
Yeah, is that how much it costs?
Yeah.
Wow, the bike itself costs $2,200.
Yep.
Wow. And then there's a monthly fee, because what you get on there are either live or, you know, recorded workouts with a personal trainer who's literally, you know, talking to you.
Right, while you do it at home. It's like, but that's a big attraction, is you get to do this at home and not in a gym with a bunch of other sweaty people.
You know, so that's the attraction. But, wow, I didn't know it was $2,200. So this is clearly a high-end device. Now, this ad showed a young couple. The husband, as you said, gifted the wife with this Peloton bike, which is a pretty nice gift, you know, in terms of cash.
Sure.
And the whole, and she's, as you said, she's documenting her adventure now. And the whole idea, the way, and I said the same thing. When I saw it, I didn't see any. All I saw was exactly what I think that what Peloton is selling, which is health and fitness, not as a fad, but as a lifestyle.
Right. Just something to continue on your journey of fitness and health. Right.
Not necessarily that you have to be overweight. But you could actually be in shape, and this is now a part of your daily routine to make health, make workout something that is a part of your daily life and your daily regime, so that fitness and your health awareness is a part of your daily routine to stay healthy for as long as you can.
Yeah, that's how I saw it.
And I think that, I don't know if people, you know, I was hearing, you know, charges of sexism and misogyny and body shaming. And they're saying that, you know, the husband, is buying this, for his wife so that she'll lose weight because he doesn't think she's skinny enough.
Right, he's not attracted to her. The marriage is going to fizzle if she doesn't do this.
Yeah, and that the woman is you know, subservient because she just wants to look good for her husband, and you know, she's and then they said, oh, well, there's a bunch of elitists and rich people who have nothing better to do with their time. I mean, there were so many, you know, I think silly arguments coming out of left field. I think at the end of the day, what we had here was a bunch, or I don't even know how many people really objected to this, but on social media, things, you know, grow into a snowball, like, you know, when Bullwinkle and Rocky would roll down the hill.
Right, yeah, it just got bigger and bigger, yeah.
I think people are a little jealous of the whole Peloton bike, you know, phenomenon, because it is out of a lot of people's price range. And so a lot of people were probably like, oh, those people with the Pelotons, you know, they think they're so cool. And so they just, I think they manufactured this, you know, this controversy, just out of their own kind of problems with the product, just to create a little controversy. But do you know that Peloton's stock price went down by 11%?
Yeah, there was a lot of blowback on it.
To their credit, they stood by the commercial, and they have. I still see it on television.
Right.
So they didn't back down. Where a lot of companies, when some any kind of controversy happens, especially something on social media, they run away real quick. But Peloton.
Yeah. Well, and again, you brought up the social media part of this, and we've talked about this about other subjects too. It takes one or two people to start the little buzz, where other people see that tweet or that post on Facebook or whatever and say, yeah, I'm kind of with that too. I'm gonna send that to somebody else, and next thing you know, this blowback grows exponentially, and next thing you know, there's this big hassle on Peloton.
And you know, the thing is too that you know, the argument, oh well, there are these rich people, these elitists. So, well, first of all, now that you tell me, because I had no idea how much the bike itself cost.
Yeah.
If it's $2,200 plus, you know, I'm sure it's probably $60 a month.
I think it's like $40 a month, yeah, for the subscription.
Which is kind of like the cost of a health club,
right,
subscription. They have to appeal to the upscale consumer, because that's the person who's going to buy this bike.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, am I going to sell a hamburger to a vegetarian?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, I have to show a couple that has the means to afford this. And the irony, too, was that the actor and actress, the blowback was so intense, at least initially, that both of them, as actors, are now afraid that they won't even get jobs.
Yeah, I think the actress just got hired for a soap or doing some kind of series thing, but there was this, you know, they went almost into hiding because they were concerned, like, hey, everyone's going to come down on us because we're in the commercial.
Yeah, I'm glad, I'm looking at this, I'm glad at least you said that you didn't see any problem, because I'm watching this going, where's the problem here? You have to me, you have to really be looking hard.
Yeah.
To find these accusations of misogyny, or the husband being looking to get the perfect wife, and the subservient wife doing what she can, almost being guilted into using this so she could have the perfect figure for her husband, or he's going to divorce her. I'm like, where are you? You know, it's a 30-second commercial. Where are you finding all these things?
They must have watched the prequels.
Like I said, I think certain people have an agenda where they're looking for stuff like that. Hey, I'll take you back to the 70s. I forget the product. Remember the commercials of the husband talking about his wife and something she did for him?
Yeah.
And he said,
yeah,
my wife, I think I'll keep her.
Yes. When you started to say that was the commercial, I can't remember what it was for.
Yeah.
Do you remember the product?
I don't remember if it was a coffee,
yeah,
or a food or something where he was like real pleased. And it's like, you want misogyny, go back to that, because this is not misogyny with the Peloton.
That, you know, Tom, could you look real quick? Could you like Google my wife, I think I'll keep her commercial? I bet you just,
yeah, see what
just let us know what the product is. But yeah, that was a commercial. You'd say, you know, my wife, she gets up and she cooks for the kids and she makes me breakfast and cleans the house and takes care,
yeah,
of the dog. And I think
on the Peloton thing, it's funny, Jim, because about 3 days after the controversy came out, I was driving down my street, and about two blocks south on my street, I saw a Peloton truck, delivery truck, in someone's driveway.
There you go.
And I thought, okay, this is either something really good,
right,
or something really bad.
Wow, yeah. But, like I said, and it's one thing when an ad like this creates a little, internet social media storm, fine, and, gets on the news and people debate it. But when it starts to really affect a company's stock price, 11% of a billion-dollar, whatever, a multi-billion-dollar company, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, well, that, and also just the welfare of these actors that are just like, oh, I'm going to do this commercial, this is cool, and next thing you know, they're catching all this hell for it.
It was for Geritol.
Oh, okay.
It was for Geritol.
Yeah, a scam product in itself.
Yeah, now, and Google Geritol, Tom, because I don't even think Tom knows what, do you know what Geritol is?
Is that the stuff that makes you old, makes you geriatric?
Well, no, the whole idea was it was some ridiculous elixir.
Right, it was a snake oil.
That was supposed to make you feel young.
Right, yeah. So she gets him the Geritol.
Yeah, so because the geriatric meant that it made you, it was there to take away the geriatric feeling.
Oh.
It was somehow, I would love to know what the ingredients were. It was probably 50% alcohol.
Yeah. Or sugar, yeah.
Yeah, but it was supposed to make you get peppy and feel good about, get out there and rejuvenate yourself. It had to be the biggest scam on earth. But for a while there, they certainly, advertise the heck out of Geritol. But yeah, there was this commercial, this patronizing guy, and he was talking about how, energetic his wife was because she was doing all these things during the day. She was taking care of the kids.
Incredible.
Yeah, watch.
She took care of the baby all day, cooked a great dinner, and even went to a school meeting. And look at her. She looks better than any of her friends. She takes care of herself. Gets her rest, does her sit-ups, watches her diet, and to make sure she gets enough iron and vitamins, she takes Geritol every morning. Makes me take it, too.
More than twice the iron of ordinary supplements, plus 7 vitamins. Take care of yourself. Take Geritol.
My wife. I think I'll keep her.
I mean, can you believe that? They're yelling at Peloton commercials.
I know. It's like we've come a long way since then, you know? You know, it's funny, too, because years ago in the early 90s, country singer Mary Chapin Carpenter, she had a song that made fun of that called He Thinks He'll Keep Her.
Yeah, He Thinks He'll Keep Her. I love that song, yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah. So I'm sorry, but I think if you are anti this Peloton ad, I would love to hear from you and explain your point here, because I don't see anything wrong with it. I think the company is selling its product to its target market, and I think its message, as I said before, is very clear. And I think that's kind of a message that everybody's trying to send today, that you know, fitness used to be a fad. And now what we're trying to say is it should be a part of your lifestyle. And here's something that you don't have to get dressed. You don't have to, you know, get into the car and go to the health club. You can get a health club level workout in your bedroom.
Right. You know, and with the Peloton thing and the people who are protesting it, I'll borrow a skit from Saturday Night Live when William Shatner told the Trekkie fans, get a life.
Yeah, right.
You've taken a silly little 30-second commercial and turned it into a colossal waste of time.
Or get a bike.
Yeah.
Well, Mick, I'm going to get going here. I appreciate so much for you getting up at this time of the morning and staying with us for so long.
Hey, my pleasure, buddy. It was fun.
It's always fun talking to you, and you always add so much to the conversation. Have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, you take care, pal.
Yeah, that was Mick Kaler joining us here in the Pop Culture Club. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. We'll be back after this message. So should I just take a break? Yeah. So stick around. We still got about 25 minutes or so. Still more of whatever this is right after this, so no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. We've got a few more minutes to go here before we pass it on to the simulcast of the WGN Morning News. I wanted to touch base on this subject because I think it's pretty relevant to the time of the year, given how many people travel. Between Christmas and New Year's, we are going to have people flying and driving and going all across the country, if not the world, to visit either relatives or just to get away from it all. And, of course, Chicago is a major hub for a lot of that travel through O'Hare Airport. And we are very proud of O'Hare Airport, and we always love to brag at the fact when it is relevant that Chicago many times is rated as the world's or the country's busiest airport. And we love to say that. It gives us a nice chest full, you know, be able to pound our chest with pride that Chicago is this major hub of transportation. There's no question that O'Hare is. But at this time of the year, and maybe you are either on your way to travel or you are already there, you're going to be coming home. Maybe you already have traveled. Maybe you did it over the Thanksgiving holiday. If you were at O'Hare, you know, and I travel, you know, at a pretty good clip. I'm at O'Hare and I realized, you know, for many people, especially tourists, when we are always looking for tourists to come here to, you know, inject their money into our economy, the first touchstone that people have with Chicago is O'Hare Airport. And in any city that you go to, if you fly, if you've never been there before, your first experience with a city is the airport. Long before you get out on the streets, long before you go to the hotel, long before you go to the restaurants or the bars or whatever sightseeing you begin to formulate your opinion of the city when you land at that airport, and how welcoming it is, and how efficient it is, and how quickly you're able to get in and get out to begin your vacation or your family visit or whatever it is. It's very important for that airport, whether it's huge or small, to make a good impression on those of us who live in that hometown, those of us who go and who live in Chicago and O'Hare is our final destination, or for those who are making a connection, and O'Hare, as I said, being a huge hub, is a major part of different connections for people going to different places. They first come to Chicago, or for people that are coming here to visit, whether it is a vacation or a family visit, whatever it is, business. O'Hare needs to be an ambassador for the city. We just can't be proud that it's so busy. Because if it's busy, but it's not serving the busy aspect well, then it's not doing its job. It's not making a good impression. It's not being a good ambassador for the city of Chicago. And I have to say, there's one aspect that's been going on at O'Hare now for more than a year that I think is a major problem, continues to be, and I just hope that we learn from this mistake, because the mistake has been made and the damage, I believe, has been done. But it certainly deserves to be pointed out for not only the deficiencies of what it is currently making people experience, but also, more importantly, the lesson to be learned so it doesn't happen again. I love this city. I've lived here my whole life. I'm born and raised here. But I also will criticize this city when I believe it deserves to be criticized. And that criticism is not to put the city down. Just the opposite. That criticism is meant to help the city improve. Those of us who have lived here for a long time or all our lives, we know why we love to live in this city that has so much going for it. The architecture, the people, the neighborhoods, the restaurants, we know all that stuff. But sadly, our local government has gone by the way of the Chicago way, as it's known, filled with a lot of corruption, filled with a lot of inefficiencies that, sadly, Chicagoans have come to accept and have come to enable. And O'Hare is such a huge place filled with politics and jobs. And it really is a perfect example of the Chicago way, if you will, of how our government works. There's a lot of people that are given jobs, given leadership positions, you name it. And there's a lot of inefficiencies, sadly, that happened at O'Hare. For the amount of traffic and the amount of people that go through O'Hare every day, it is a miracle place that it runs as efficiently as it does. But I believe there's one thing going on, at least that's very obvious to me, that I think puts a black mark on O'Hare, especially for those people who are coming here to visit. You know the People Mover? That train that takes you from the terminal when you get your bags or when you land out to the parking lots and the different areas, the international terminal and the remote parking. There's a lot of people that take those People Mover trains. And it's their last step before they leave O'Hare. It's almost the lasting impression that they have of O'Hare. And for the last year and a half, that entire People Mover system has been one of the worst examples of poor management, poor government, poor vision, poor vigilance, and ultimately poor performance and not serving the city of Chicago, not representing the city of Chicago as it should, and not being the great ambassador for the city of Chicago that it should be. And I'll tell you what that is right after I take a short break. But first, I'll tell you about this in the Weather Center from the WGN Weather Center. Today, Monday, December 23rd, mostly sunny skies with temperatures that could reach 57 degrees. Tuesday, Christmas Eve, continue with mild weather with highs reaching the 50s. Wednesday, Christmas Day. Extensive cloudiness, keeping the temps below the 50-degree mark for the first time in a few days. Partly cloudy overnight. Thursday, breaks in the clouds will allow those temps to get a little warmer to the lower 50s. And on Friday, the cold front approaches from the west, which will give us some thickening clouds with a chance of showers as the day goes on, with some high temps in the 40s and rain likely overnight. Current temperatures at O'Hare, just as I'm talking about, 38 degrees, Midway 37. At the lakefront, it is 39. It's about 3:47. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. So, hey, no switching. Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here for a few more minutes. What I was talking about was O'Hare Airport, as this becomes one of the most busiest and hectic travel times of the year, and especially in the next couple of days. You may be leaving today, in fact, you may be getting up early right now to catch that early flight to get to wherever you're going for Christmas Day. So this may be very pertinent for you, which is why I'm talking about it. I am a frequent flyer and patron of O'Hare Airport. And the people mover system is a very, I think, vital part of the O'Hare experience. It gets you out to the remote parking lots. It gets you out to the international terminal. And as I said, it's one of the last steps that you take before you are out of O'Hare and into the city as you begin to enjoy your vacation, your visit, your business trip, or just coming back home. And when you land, you want to get to that destination as quickly and as hassle-free as possible. And the People Mover has been a very successful addition to O'Hare for decades. Over the last several years, it was going to be upgraded. And when it was initially planned, the goal was that it would never completely stop. It would stop on weekends for or weekdays for certain times, weekends for certain times. But the demand by the city initially for the companies that were working on this were that it would never completely close down, so that patrons of the airport, passengers, visitors would not be completely inconvenienced. And in those times when the People Mover system was shut down, they would have shuttle buses. But the goal was to hopefully be as hassle-free during this period of renovation as possible. Well, just the opposite happened. This People Mover renovation now has been delayed at least two times. It was supposed to be done earlier this year. I think even last year it was supposed to be done. Then it was supposed to be done in the summer. Then it was supposed to be done in Thanksgiving. Then it was supposed to be done by Christmas. And now we're talking about sometime in 2020, and there's still a question mark after that. And the alternative with this not only not being done, but according to what it was supposed to happen, it was never supposed to shut down. It has been shut down for about a year now. Completely shut down. It has not been in service at all, which means that shuttle buses have been put into use to get people to those same destinations. Well, the problem is that those shuttle buses are within the same traffic as all the cars dropping people off, which is so chaotic. The drop-off is much more chaotic than the pickup down on the lower level. So now you've got people, especially arriving here in the winter. What was great about the People Mover, it was all indoors. When you waited for the train to come and to get to the train, it was all indoors. Well, now you're making people wait outside, especially now. Now it's not bad. It's 50 degrees. But in the winter here, in the coming months, it will get very cold, as we all know. You've got people waiting with their bags to get on a cold bus, a crowded bus, to carry your bag up and lift it onto the bus and be crowded with people and then be stuck in the regular traffic and then make several stops and then finally get to your spot. And not only that, but you've got to wait for your specific bus. There are several buses that go to different areas because there are different lots and different stops. What used to take about 10 minutes on the People Mover now easily takes a half hour. So not only is there a time crunch, but there is a huge, I don't even know what to call it, but let's just say it's a huge inconvenience. You're carrying your bag, you're lifting your bag, you're dropping your bag off, you're picking it up, you're standing, you're loading it out, you're waiting outside for the bus, you're waiting for your bus. It is hardly the kind of experience that you would want to have, especially for a first-time person to come to Chicago. This is not a very welcoming experience for a business person who travels a lot and just wants to get, who's been on a plane all day and just wants to get to their room. It is not a pleasurable experience for the person who has been traveling and just wants to get home where they live. It is certainly not a welcoming experience for the first time or the multiple visitor here who is excited to come to Chicago and visit and has to go through these hassles. And what's most aggravating about this is that when kudos to the Chicago Tribune for looking into this several months ago and continuing to investigate this, when finally pressed for an answer, the officials at O'Hare said, well, ultimately what happened to that project is it got out of our control, and Mayor Emanuel wanted us to focus more on the plan and the project of the new multi-billion dollar international terminal that's getting built. And so this plan, even though it was already underway, sort of took, got kind of pushed down on the priority level and was given to people, get this, who really didn't have a lot of experience in handling such a project. That's your excuse? That's what happens when we have government that's run by corruption and nepotism and cronyism. We have people that aren't really qualified to do their jobs, who are given their jobs, and then when a very important project comes up, one that helps define the image of O'Hare, is in the hands of people who are not qualified, this is what you get. And so for the last year, the People Mover has been completely closed down. It has been completely inconvenient for people to get on these buses, to be sitting in this traffic, to be waiting for these buses, to finally get on the bus and carry your bag and get off and get on. It is not putting our best foot forward. So, look, it is what it is. It's another symptom of bad management and bad government, which sadly is a part of Chicago's history as well as its present. And hopefully those things will change. And hopefully this will get fixed soon and we will have the new People Mover in place and all this will be a memory. But a lesson needs to be learned here. You have to have the right people to manage the right projects that they are trained to do, and they need to have the priority and the resources to get it done and managed correctly. And if it's not done, the people that are doing it need to be held to task. We just nod our heads and go, yeah, well, I guess that's the way it is. We take that from our sports teams here in Chicago. We take that from our government here in Chicago. And being a lifelong Chicagoan, I'm so tired of seeing and hearing that. And this is something that does affect our city. It affects our image. We're fighting a tough image here, folks. Around the country, everybody thinks we live in Dodge City. Everybody thinks that we live in the crime capital of the world. And when they come and land at O'Hare, if that place isn't working efficiently, that's not helping. This People Mover thing is a complete mess. Let's just realize it's a mess. Let's get it done as quick as we can. But let's learn a lesson for the next big project, because we're going to build an international terminal worth billions of dollars. Let's not make that another mess. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Tirano has been filling in here for Nick DiGilio this morning. If you have been with us since midnight, thank you so much for staying up early, staying up late, whatever you want to call it. Hopefully you have the day off today as we move toward Christmas. If you like what you've heard tonight, this morning and this evening, I hope you come back at 11 o'clock tonight, because I'll be back here. And as I said, at 11:30, the show starts at 11, but at 11:30 I'll be presenting a one-man performance, my one-man performance, of A Christmas Carol to get you in the mood as we approach Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. So I hope you'll be back with me in a few hours.